using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 16th of November, year of our Lord, 2021. Today we're going to have a psychologist who is going to look at 610 days of emergency, and what it has done to us as a group. As I've said for the longest time, the only science behind what has happened to us over the last year is behavioral science. But we also have some amazing admissions from the CEO of Bayer. He said, yeah, these mRNA are really gene therapy, it's really genetic therapy, but we didn't want to tell people that because we figured they wouldn't take it if we called it that. So they called it a vaccine. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Well, yesterday began the lockdown of all unvaccinated Austrians. And let's make it clear, we got Australia and we got Austria. Now, in Australia, they're pushing back in a big way this last weekend because the government is continuing to grab power. There is no stopping them once they get a taste of this. They have reverted to their primal nature, which is one to dominate, to rob, to steal, to brutalize other people. That's the kind of person that is drawn into government today. And unless we have the restraining influence of Christian morality on these people individually and on us collectively, that's what we will always have. That's why it's important to talk about this, not in the way that Flynn talks about it. We're not trying to impose anything from the outside on people. But if you elect people who have absolutely no moral character, and if the country itself has no moral character, you will wind up with the types of people who are ruling us now in every country of the world. And so we look at what is happening in Australia. This Austrian chancellor, Schallenberg, he said, he's proud of the fact that he was going to do this on Monday. Now, we've seen different figures coming from different sources, anywhere from 65% of the people vaccinated in Austria to maybe 70% or whatever. It's still a very, very small minority. What they're saying is Austria is the least vaccinated of the European nations in terms of percentage. And again, we don't know if that's true or not because these people are playing with the numbers. However, when we're looking at a country that has a population of 8.9 million, I was really kind of surprised to see how few people there was there, really. I mean, when we look at Texas, we've got 27 million people. So they've got a third the population of the state of Texas. But nevertheless, that's a lot of people. 8.9 million people. So if it's 35%, or about a third, let's just say it's about 3 million people they're going to put under house arrest because they refuse to get a genetic code injection. That's what this is. I've been calling it that for over a year. Now we have the CEO of Bayer, when he was addressing other globalists, other CEOs, political leaders, he said, yeah. This is it's a genetic therapy, but we didn't want to call it that. You know, well, they are Dr. Strangelove. We didn't want to call it that. So we called it a vaccine, yeah. We didn't want to call it tyranny. So we called it a pandemic. Ah, that's so funny. Yeah. They will get used to it, don't worry. When we see what is happening in Austria, here's what this looks like. Look at this. They're cruising. Three cops cruising through a store. It's almost like, yeah, I don't know, did the Nazis win or something? Look at this. Shaking these people down for their pass, their online pass. Very chilling. Your identity papers, please. I'm sorry, your identity computer, please. I'm sorry, you do not compute. We must take you away. Look at this. Stopping somebody in a car. He's sealed up in a car. He's not even driving a convertible. Yeah, okay. Well, spot checks on anybody in public, even if they are in a car. And, of course, you see a very young police officer there, smiling. This is so normal. We do this all the time in Austria, right? Yeah, evidently. We're not taking the step lightly, but it is necessary, says Schallenberg. He says the country's COVID-19 vaccination is, quote, shamefully low. I tell Klaus when I see him, right? I mean, come on. Sorry, Herr Führer. I know I must do better. You know, next time he meets him at Davos, he can say, Hail Hydra. It's shamefully low. It's just so embarrassing when you have to go to these globalist confabs and everybody's sitting around comparing their vaccination rates. So what did you do, Hans? Well, I'm sorry, we only got 65%. 65? That's a failing grade, you know. Grades, they're so racist. I don't want no grades. I'm deeply ashamed of my country, says Austria's greatest Olympian. And he quits a political post because of these lockdowns. Yeah, some people do not like to hear the voices of Austrians raised in this kind of shout. And no matter, there was a lot of people pushing back. I showed that to you. These are people in the area. And let's see, I don't have that clip anymore, but I showed you the clip of the massive, massive pushback over the weekend. They were not out there shouting Heil Hitler. They were out there calling this guy Hitler. And Felix Gottwald has spoken out as the police are patrolling the streets of Austria to check people, whether or not they have their identity papers. And this article from RT says it's about 2 million Austrians. Well, it's really more like 3 million. They have permission to leave their homes only for work or for food shopping. Because, you know, when you're working or you're shopping for food, you can't spread the disease. No, this is nothing but punishment. And Schallenberg, whatever this Nazi's name is. Schallenberg. He admitted that it is to coerce people into getting vaccinated. They're only going to do this for 10 days, and they're going to make exceptions for people going to work or going food shopping and that type of thing. But don't go buy clothes. Well, last week I told you what it is like for a family living in Lithuania. They're shutting down even their food shopping now. They're saying, well, you can go into the banks, but you can only stay there for 15 minutes. Well, I don't know what bank he banks with, but the banks that I go to, it usually takes longer than that for me to get to the counter. Anyway, this guy is a 3-time Olympic and triple world champion, Gottwald. He's resigned from his role as chairman for popular sports while denouncing, quote, division, agitation, and discrimination. He said, these are the government's imperatives of the hour. Oh, he is exactly right. That is what they want. This is not about health. This has absolutely nothing to do with medicine. And as I pointed out, I've got Dr. Mark McDonald, who's going to be coming on later in the show. He's going to be talking about his new book, United States of Fear. I talked to him a couple months ago, and I told him, I said, come back on when you get that book finished, because he is spot on with what this really is. I've been saying for a very long time at the beginning of this, I said, you know what the real disease is? It's OCD. It's psychological. And so we've turned America into an OCD nation. You know, people running around trying to put masks on their faces. Don't touch me. Don't touch this. I'm, you know, rubbing the, I see people out there using gloves and you know, rubbing the gas pumps last year when I was driving. The few people that were out were scared to death. I put the top down and enjoyed it. Some of the best. It was like deja vu. I felt like I told Karen, I felt like it was like 40 years ago in terms of the traffic congestion. It was great. That's all gone. Now the people are out and they're driving worse than ever. The insurance adjuster came by. I told you my daughter had some sheetrock. Actually, I think it's hardy plank siding. that flew off of a truck in front of her, wasn't tied down, and smashed her windshield. It's just amazing that it didn't come through the windshield, but hit on the passenger side. It hit glass all through the car. And then took out the fender and a whole bunch of other things. And when the insurance adjuster came, he said, you know, I've never seen anything like this. He said, we had 10 cases the week before. And he said, this week I've had 30 accidents. He says, like people forgot how to drive last year. Very, very congested. Anyway, getting back to the Austrian. After 9 official months of dysfunction, I can say that there may be a lot going on in our country, but certainly not about the health and the well-being of Austrians or the people living in Austria. And that in the midst of a great health crisis, said the former all-time Nordic Olympic champion, the best Olympic champion that they have in Austria. He says, I'm deeply ashamed of my country. And as an Austrian, I am angry, sad, and stunned at the same time. Travis, you remember when I took the kids to Salzburg, and to Austria in general. And when was it? That was 2001, spring of 2001, was it?
Yeah, it was before September 11th.
Yeah, that's right. When you could still travel in a quasi-civilized manner. Anyway, we went there. And when we went to Salzburg, we took the Sound of Music tour. Kids were familiar with that. And it was kind of funny, wasn't it? Do you remember what the guard said?
I remember at the end.
Armed guards. No, he's the tour director. What did he say?
He was a little upset about the whole deal. Just that was what Austria seemed to be known for. They were collaborators with Hitler. He was upset about that, and then at the very end, he's like, well, at the end of the movie, they go over the mountains, but if they had actually done that, they would have ended up in Berchtesgaden, Hitler's summer home, which wouldn't have been good for them.
Well, he was right about that. But what was really funny, too, was the fact that this guy makes his living doing a Sound of Music tour, because you can see all the different locations where they shot it, and Mirabel Palace Gardens, and, you know, the outside room that was all glass where they were doing that dance number 16 going on 17 or something. Anyway, they take you around all these different places, but they felt like the movie painted everybody in Austria as Nazi sympathizers except for the Von Trapps. And so he had this, he did this job where he's doing the tour and he's constantly trashing the movie that it's the whole reason you're taking the tour. You know, so yeah, they got it all wrong. But I don't know. Maybe Oscars and Hammerstein got it right, you know, with we see what's happening now. One guy who is, this is a columnist, Tim Black. He writes yesterday about Austria's lockdown. He says, this is not how you should tackle anti-vax sentiment. Now, this guy, Tim Black, is big in terms of pro-vaccination. Now, he really wants everybody to get a jab. And he's really upset because he says, you know, the problem with this is that it's authoritarian and it's counterproductive and it's actually going to make the other guys entrench their position and it's going to actually result in more freedom and pushback against our authoritarian governments. And it's like, that's exactly what I was saying last year before the election about Trump. I said, Biden is going to revert to his authoritarian, dictatorial nature. And that will be a test. If we rise up and refuse, do not comply with this, push back in every different way that we can, that will be a good thing. So this will be this is a test. This is the big test right now that we're going through. Everybody's going through it. And this is the point that we push back. And this guy is saying, yeah, you know, you do the kinds of things like Biden is doing, the kinds of things like this Austrian dictator doing, that's not good for our side. You know, we want to get everybody vaccinated, and this is backfiring. You're seeing the same thing from John Nolte on Breitbart. Big, big, big vaccine cheerleader. Unbelievable. It's actually kind of funny. If you see some of his articles, and it's about every week or two, he does an article talking about how the left is really wants to kill all the conservatives because they're so over-the-top authoritarian with these vaccine mandates that they're scaring you and they don't want you to get the vaccine because they really want you to die. He's that big a believer, John Nolte at Breitbart, he's that big a believer in the Trump juice. He really loves those Trump genetic code injections. He thinks they're going to save you, and it's essential for you to get it. And so he's very upset because, like this guy, He thinks that the dictatorial authoritarianism of all this stuff, that you cannot escape seeing that. You know, once you see that, it's like, so, you know, why are they so focused on vaccine and vaccine only? So he says, you know, this because they want us all to die. That's why. No, he's wrong about that as well. Anyway, this guy, Black, Tim Black, says the Austrian government has come up with a novel solution to the fairly low vaccine uptake among its citizens. No, not vaccine passports. It's worse than that. As of today, yesterday, Austria has locked down the unvaccinated for at least the next 10 days. Yeah, because by that time it'll be over. No, that's a test. That's a test of not only those 3 million people that are going to be locked down, that one-third of the population of Austria, but it's also a test of the other two-thirds of the people. Do you understand the power that you're giving to your government when you allow them to do this to one-third of the people, arbitrarily, punitively? When you allow them to have that kind of power, a lot of people who believe in the medical aspects of these genetic code injections, a lot of people have looked at that and said, yeah, okay, I made that decision to take it. I think that's a good decision to take it, but I don't want my government to have that kind of power. And so, as I pointed out, in Canada, you got a fireman who's organized. He took the vaccine at the very beginning, and he has now organized opposition to the vaccine mandates and the passports because he says the government should not, you know, that was my particular choice. The government should not be doing that. So for the next 10 days at least, unjabbed Austrians will only be allowed outside to work or to shop for essentials. But more troubling still, says Tim Black, Austria, like its largely German-speaking neighbors, Switzerland and Germany, has a relatively high level of vaccine hesitancy. Let me just say, I'm not vaccine hesitant. I'm vaccine adamantly opposed. You take off the liability protection, and then we can talk. Until that point in time, we got nothing to talk about. And then after you take off the liability protection, then you can start with a due process of doing a test, except we've already started doing the test. So what you need to do now, we'll talk about this coming up, is you actually need to have an investigation of what we see in the VAERS database. So you take off the liability and you do an investigation of the VAERS stuff. And then you come back to me after your investigation is finished and you've locked up Fauci and Trump and Biden and a bunch of other people. And then we'll talk if you got a different product. Anyway, as Financial Times reported last week, this trio has by far, that is Switzerland, Germany, Austria, by far the highest proportion of people in Western Europe who have not received a single vaccine dose. In Austria, 25% of all people over the age of 12 remain unjabbed, while other people just reported as 35%. See, they don't know. The numbers are all over the place. They really don't know, and a lot of this they're making it up. Anyway, in Switzerland, it's 24%. In Germany, it's 22%. The next most vaccine-resistant nation is Sweden with 16%. So, says Black, so there's a problem. Well, no, there's not a problem. I guess there is a problem if 84% of the people are stupid enough to take a genetic injection without that they know hasn't been tested, or if they can be pressured, or if they can be lied to. But the Austrian government's solution is wrong and authoritarian. It is effectively going to force people into vaccination centers on pain of losing their most basic freedoms. And to catch these unvaccinated trespassers, the police are going to be stopping people at random, demanding to see proof of vaccination. Those unwilling to produce it will be hit with a 500 euro fine. It'll look like this. Now tell me that that is exactly what, is this the way that you want to proceed? Is this the way that Biden is going to roll this out? Maybe he could start teaching OSHA to speak German. The brand new People, Freedom, and Rights Party, MFG is the initials in German, established precisely on an anti-vaccination platform, picked up over 6% of the vote and 3 seats. This is a new party that has been created on an anti-vaccination platform. The Freedom Party, as well as MFG, so they got two different parties, are political expressions of a worrying, says this guy who is pro-vaccine, it is a worrying anti-vaccination sentiment. But that sentiment will not be addressed by coercive measures. If anything, the lockdown of the unvaccinated will intensify that sentiment. it will convince those who are already distrustful of the government and the lies that we have been told, I'll add. But he says those who are distrustful of the government, it will convince them that they have a good reason to distrust it. You think? It will reinforce the paranoia of those already inclined towards conspiracy theories. Let me tell you, if they're doing it, you're not paranoid about it. You're just paying attention to what's happening. And if they're doing it, it's not a theory anymore, but it is a conspiracy. And we've told you where this comes from. This is a globalist conspiracy. They've been working on this at Davos, at Bilderberg, all these meetings that they have every couple of months where they all fly in with their private jets. This is a long-standing conspiracy. They've done public videos about what they intend to do with their conspiracy, and it is a criminal conspiracy. They're breathing together. That's the literal meaning of the word conspiracy. They're breathing together to take everything from us, to reduce the population to a tiny percentage of what it is right now. They've set out to kill and to sterilize us, to rob us blind. You have to understand what is happening. He says it will intensify this. It will make people who already distrust these people realize that they were right, essentially. It will reinforce this paranoia and the conspiracy theories, and it will confirm the suspicions of all those who think that something is wrong with the vaccine. Yeah, otherwise, why do you have to force it at the point of a bayonet? The Austrian, and why do you have to give them legal immunity for the damage that they do to people? If there's nothing wrong with it, why did they need legal immunity? And why were they demanding, Pfizer was demanding from, showed you the information, back in February. There was Argentina, Brazil, a third Latin American nation. They said, look, they're basically holding a gun to our head. You know, they're saying, nobody's going to get in or out of your country unless you get our protection. See, it's a protection racket. These guys are like the mafia, the mob. They run a protection racket. You know, gee, it'd be a shame if you couldn't get in or out of your country, wouldn't it? So maybe you need to get that vaccine. This is why Netanyahu sold out the Israelis. He said, yeah, put us at the front of the line, and I'll give you information on what your product does to my guinea pigs, my people. I'll tell you what it's done to the Israelis for 2 years. How about that? Deal? All right, shake on it. So the Austrian government's use of force looks effectively like an admission of defeat, he said, because let me tell you something, it is. You know, it takes a long time to get people motivated. As the Founding Fathers wrote at the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, you know, we don't change governments for light causes. But after a long train of abuse, that we have the right and the duty to alter or to abolish that government. That time is now. This has been a long train of abuse. Long train coming. 610 days. Is that enough? Are you tired of this fake emergency? Are you tired of this medical dictatorship? Boy, I was tired of it before it started. I knew it was coming. I opposed it before it started. I've opposed it every day of this for 610 days. But now, you know, it takes a long time to get people to understand what is happening and to live through this and to see it on a regular basis. There's a lot of inertia, isn't there, in getting a big crowd going. But it's like a big ship. You know, when the Titanic is headed for that iceberg, they couldn't say, oh, look, there's an iceberg. Let's just, you know, turn it. No, they saw the iceberg. They're turning as hard as they can. But that ship is just still skirting over there to that iceberg. Well, it takes a long time to turn the ship of state around. There's a lot of inertia. But what these people need to understand, and what people like this guy who's pushing the vaccine need to understand, he's starting to get it, is that once you do turn that around, and once you start building that inertia in the other direction, oh, they're going to have a hard time stopping that. And we'll just have to see just how far that ship goes once it turns around. So dailyskeptic.org out of the UK says, are the lockdown zealots and the pro-vax fanatics part of a Jim Jones-style cult? Well, that's a rhetorical question, actually. True. But here's how. Could the COVID zealots and the pro-vax fanatics, could they be symptoms of cult-like mindset? Well, here's an extract from a post that was written by two registered nurses. It was Professor Roger Watson and Dr. Niall McRae. They're talking about the extremism of the supporters. Here's what they have to say. Millions have been brought round to unquestioning faith and heroic medicine, and they herald vaccines as miracles of science. How many pastors have I read that to? I mean, they just gloss right over all of the genetic modifications of your body. They gloss over the cult of death behind the testing and development of this, killing babies then and now. They just gloss all over that. They gloss over the mark of the beast implications and how close that looks to it. You say, well, no, because according to my timeline that I've driven, that I've put here in Revelation, you know, it's this has to happen and that has to happen, that has to happen. And of course, we know that Satan will have full disclosure on anything that he has you do. You know, he never deceives anybody, does he? He always tells the truth. That's one thing I like about that guy. He's straight up. But anyway, it's a miracle of science, we've told, been told by Al Mohr, by Franklin Graham, by the Pope, by so many others. With slavish adherence to rules and restrictions, their blind obedience appears to have been a drinking of Kool-Aid. That's why I call it the Trump Kool-Aid, or you just could call it Trump AIDS, like the AIDS epidemic, something that was pushed and profited by Fauci, experimenting on kids. And this is an acquired immune deficiency shot, AIDS. Anyway, we are not suggesting that vaccine enthusiasts are at the same level of delusion as those of the doomsday cult. I am. Do you think that everybody in the cult realized that they were committing suicide? I don't know if they did or not. I mean, were they lied to? Or, you know, certainly some of them knew that they were taking that, committing suicide. And that is the analogy, that people will commit suicide when they're told to do it by the cult leader. But I imagine there are probably some people there who were lied to. You had kids who were given this by their parents who were in the cult, which is what's happening today with the Trump Kool-Aid. Parents who bought into this are giving it to their kids, same way they did in Jonestown. Some parallels, however, may be drawn, they said. They said they don't want to call them exactly the same as that, a doomsday cult, but I will. If we consider Jim Jones's community in the jungle as a pure form of cult behavior, we can use such extreme manifestation for comparative purposes. He was an idealistic, charismatic figure. Jones was a civil rights activist in the 1960s. He gave his son the middle name of Gandhi. He decried social injustice. He recruited hundreds of black Americans as well as numerous graduates, versed in radical ideology. And then in 1978, November the 18th, 2 days away from this, the cult culminated in the murder-suicide of 918 followers, most having drunk cyanide-laced Kool-Aid on his orders. And so when you look at this, who would be the figure that we would have as a charismatic figure to get people to go down this road? Let's see. Was it Fauci? The left loves Fauci. Fauci is kind of the left's Jim Jones. But who was it that sold the 4D chess? I don't know. I mean, was it Alex Jones? Was he the Jim Jones of this cult? Or was it Trump himself? I'm more inclined to think it's Trump. You know, we had the, you know, Jim Jones is telling people what to do, and he had his people there who were, you know, his evangelists. If there's ever an evangelist for Trump, it was Alex Jones. But, you know, that's the charismatic figures, the people who have a big audience. And there was probably no more charismatic figure than Trump. I don't think they would have been able to pull this off if they didn't have Trump in that place last year. If you'd had Biden do that same thing, they would have not gone for it. The left jumped into this because the left likes lockdowns and authoritarianism. They are paranoid. They're worried about dying because they don't have a relationship with God, many other things. But they are all about safety, always have been. You know, we're going to stop you from driving cars. We want to have zero traffic deaths, which means we're going to have zero cars and on and on. And so they have been trained for a long time in this climate cult to believe that the world is going to end. And they believe that that's the end of everything as well. And so that makes them very susceptible to this. They're very afraid of dying. So that makes them vulnerable to this type of thing. And so those people were going to easily go along with this, even when it was being done by somebody that they hated, Donald Trump. But Donald Trump put a big pacifier in everybody's mouth. So a professor of psychiatry at Harvard, Theodore Millon, described a personality disorder, he said, whereby the world is divided into good and evil with no middle ground. Well, that's another thing we saw happening with Trump, isn't it? The self-declared good cannot bear to be in the company of the bad, which is why extreme cults take refuge outside of normal society. But in this particular cult of the left now, what they're doing is they're driving everybody that's not in their cult out of society. So rather than withdrawing, you know, and going to some place where they can be by themselves, they're forcing everybody else into solitude and seclusion with their passports. Common to cults is a belief that humanity is in grave danger. Now, that's exactly the phrase that was put in quotes in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decision. They actually pointed out the fact that here we are about 2 years into this thing and you're still calling it an emergency. There is no grave danger, and that is evidenced by the fact that you took 2 months to write this regulation and you're not going to put it out for another 2 months. So they got it. The people of the Fifth Circuit Court understood this is not an emergency. There is no grave danger. You have no basis for an emergency. And yet we're still there. We still have the emergency, emergency. Research shows that contrary evidence strengthens rather than undermines the belief of cult followers. Cultists struggle to relax. It's part of the reason why they depend on meditative practices. And COVID culture has shown a difference in outlook between progressives and conservatives. Converts to the conservative cause from the left, such as educationalist Catherine Birbal-Singh, was initially surprised to find that her erstwhile political opponents were not the ogres that they'd been portrayed to be. Tammy Bruce, a gay feminist broadcaster in the U.S., remarked, "Something had to explain why my left elite allies were generally miserable, angry, paranoid, while the enemy was secure, comfortable, generally happy people." And they were put to sleep by Trump. They should have risen up to resist this. The sooner you fight against this stuff, the better. But now it is happening. Anyway, COVID absolutism, vaccine absolutism, allows no exceptions. Refuseniks will get no sympathy. And it is troubling to see the lack of lines drawn by punitive zealots. If the government ordered vaccination of newborn babies, if unvaccinated relatives and neighbors were sent to quarantine camps, if hospital treatment were denied to the unvaccinated, would supporters of the regime call for caution? Unlikely, because that's not how cultists behave. Let me just say, this is not a theoretical. We've had Noam Chomsky say that we must be removed from society if we're unvaccinated. They want quarantine camps. The quarantine camps are being built in Australia now. They're bragging about it on the news. And so quarantine camps, the forced vaccination of newborn babies, all of this stuff, that is already happening. It's already happening. It's already being proposed. And so just to give you an idea of what they're talking about here, we have, and I've got it coming up, the Democrats are pushing really hard. We had one guy who introduced it in Virginia, but now he's got a lot of Democrat co-sponsors. There's over 33 Democrat congresspeople who want to ban air travel within the United States for the unvaccinated. It will never stop. They will never come back. Freedom is never given. And once these people start on their conquest of our individual liberties, their conquest of our freedom and dignity, they will not stop. They must be resisted. And there is no way that they are going to say, oh, well, okay, that's enough. That was fun while it lasted. Now I'm tired of being a dictator. They never get tired of that. They always want more. It's just like the billionaires. You know, when you ask David Rockefeller, as a reporter did, you're the richest man in the world. How much is enough? And Rockefeller said, always a little bit more. How much power is enough for these people? Always a little bit more. Freedom is never given. It is taken. We've allowed them to take it away from us. They will not give it back. We must take it back. Now, I had some guy leave a message on my podcast and said, you know there's only one solution to this. Why won't you say what it is? What he's trying to do is to goad me into taking the bait. I'm not going to take that bait. And I hope you're not going to take that bait either. He wants me to call for a violent preemptive attack. I'm not calling for that. That's not a justified war. War is always done to try to minimize bloodshed. It's always done in response to a physical attack. I mean, if somebody's going to physically attack me over not being vaccinated, you better believe I'll fight back. And there won't be any restrictions on that. And it will be justified. But it's not justified for me to preemptively get violent with somebody. The purpose of war is to stop the aggression, and you do not escalate it. You let them escalate it. There are other things that we can do, and he tries to pretend that I think that lawsuits and things like that are the way out of it. I've said I don't think there's any help coming from Washington, period, and that includes the court systems. I don't think there's much, if any, help coming from the state levels. And that includes the governors and the state legislatures. I think we have to do this from we start building our society, and if they attack our society, we defend our society. It's just that simple. Freedom-loving Australians are doing this now. They've refused to submit to draconian COVID laws, and again, as I pointed out on Saturday, and I showed you, I think, some pictures of it yesterday. I didn't show the pictures of it. But you've seen the same pictures, except there was even more of them this time. They had the streets full the last time I showed it, but it's building every single week. Tens of thousands took to the street, one of the largest protests in years. The Melbourne residents numbered in the tens of thousands, and they're protesting new authority that dictator Dan Android, the little Chinese bot, wants to give himself. So there's a lot of inertia here, folks, because this is really starting to build. It's building every week there in Melbourne, where they've seen the worst of this. And it's going to be hard for them to stop this, just like these guys are concerned about what's happening. Look at this in Australia. You got political parties that have arisen just to fight this medical tyranny. Due to its unspecified terms and to its open-ended time limits, the Rule of Law Education Center has warned that the Pandemic Management Bill would grant the Premier of Victoria, Australia, and the Health Minister, quote, absolute, unreviewable power to indefinitely keep Victorians in lockdown. And so they said this huge movement was likened to a, quote, runaway train, and it's building in speed. This is going to be like the wreck of the old 97. commentators describe the protest as a pivotal moment in the future of Victoria. People are protesting for, quote, personal freedom, personal movement, and against, quote, medical apartheid. I'm scared for my future, said one. I'm scared for my parents that they're going to lose their job and then we'll be homeless because they don't want to give in, said a 14-year-old. I'm scared for when I have kids, said the 14-year-old. What if this is still going on? I'm going to have to fight for my kids too. So that 14-year-old knows this isn't going to stop. You got to take it back. And the time to do this is now. Sooner the better. Another woman who came to Australia from East Timor as a child. She said her family was fleeing the corrupt governments. She said I never imagined that I would experience this in Australia. Governments are here to serve and to protect us, not to push fear. This bill only serves one person, and that person is Dan Andrews. Another person said, how could you give someone like Dan Andrews more power after what he's done? The bills were introduced with virtually no notice. See, this is what it's come to. The bills were introduced with virtually no notice and would not even require any cases of COVID-19 in order to be enacted, leading liberal MP Ryan Smith, and remember, there, when they call somebody liberal, it means they're libertarian. You know, the left here, just as the left steals your money, they steal your labels too. If it's a good label, they steal it and put it on themselves. Liberal used to mean somebody who was for liberty, just that simple. And it still does in Australia. So the liberal, Ryan Smith, at least that's what the party used to mean. I mean, you got people like Gladys Berejiklian, you know, she was part of the Liberal Party. Because these people at the top are so corrupt, they didn't have any ideology. Their ideology was to, you know, get whatever they could personally get out of it. And the stated ideology of the Liberal Party is a libertarian ideology in Australia. But she was just a corrupt official who was paid off. They did this to all of them. That's why I said these political labels at the top mean absolutely nothing. It doesn't mean if you, you know, you can be liberal or conservative or you can be socialist or whatever. It doesn't matter. They were all bought. Liberal MP said, I've never seen a worse piece of legislation that gives not the government of the day, but the premier of the day. The premier of the day, unprecedented, draconian, and dictatorial power. Let me say to you that, you know, we had the
emergency, everybody to get from street.
When we had that put out by Donald Trump 610 days ago, what did that do? Well, that gave the governors of various states, you know, like Dan Andrews and Victoria, that gave the governors dictatorial power. It gave them discretionary spending of billions of dollars. That were, in most cases, many, many times the annual budget. Just look at Gavin Newsom in California. Or you can look at Republican Brad Little in Idaho. Gavin Newsom had a budget deficit that was, what was it, $10, $15 billion in California. He wound up with a surplus of $75 because of the money that Trump gave him. And he gave it to these Democrat you think the Democrat governors are the problem? Seriously? How did they get that power? How did they get that money? They got the power and the money and the declaration of emergency from Trump. That's how this all happened. If you don't understand the mechanism, it's going to keep happening to us over and over again. They're going to keep suckering you into this thing. And they'll use the labels and the personalities to blind you as to what is going on. So they said the bill will allow detention without cause. This bill will allow arbitrary arrest in Australia. Andrews has now watered it down a little bit. They had had fines of $90,000 for individuals if they disobeyed his orders. If you were a business, $455,000, $500,000 if you disobey him. Yet they still have two-year jail terms. They're still there in the bill. Let's take a look at one more country before we take a break, and that is Argentina. Here's the headlines from Breitbart. Libertarians fuel a fall of socialists in the Senate for the first time in 40 years. This is a blowback against the COVID tyranny. They've been ruled by socialists down in Argentina. And now libertarians have arisen. The guy who is leading this thing was a TV commentator, a charismatic television personality. And now he's put together a coalition, a political coalition, known as Liberty Advances. They said voters soundly rejected the coalition formerly known as Front for All, which was a socialist, Marxist thing, defined by this move. 2 years has been the 2 years of President Alberto Fernandez has been defined by national outrage at the quarantine protocol, at forced masking, at economic devastation. Fernandez's regime endured months of protests in response to coronavirus lockdowns, increased taxes, and a scandal which revealed that socialists had hoarded and used, among other things, vaccines for themselves before they shared them with the public. Among the other related scandals, you had one of these socialists caught fondling a woman who was not his wife during a congressional Zoom session. You know, he was essentially their Cuomo. A Peronist senator declaring, "You have rights, but not during a pandemic." How many American politicians have said that same thing over and over again, over and up both parties? So complicating the situation for the socialists has been the rise of a pro-freedom movement by a libertarian economist, Javier Milei, who began his career as a charismatic television personality and has since built a political coalition known as Liberty Advances. They note that a high number of young supporters and an atmosphere described as resembling a rock concert when he holds his rallies. Local victories for his party, Liberty Advances, became the third most powerful party in Buenos Aires, despite having no establishment support and being the brainchild of a TV pundit. He's believed to be headed to Congress, though not all votes have been counted at press time. He has regularly described career politicians as high caste. In other words, a caste system like you have in India. You know, we have the Brahmins at the top and you have the untouchables or the unvaccinated at the bottom. You know, that type of thing. That's exactly what it is. It is a caste system. It is a feudal system where they want you to be serfs, where you rent everything. You own nothing. You don't own the land. You could rent a little bit of a portion of it. You could work that, but you got to pay. Got to pay the landlord there. So he says these politicians are a high caste that he wishes to destroy. And he expresses viscerally a disgust for socialism and for the state in general. I like this guy. I'd vote for him. We're telling him the tyrant, Alberto Fernandez, that we will not sit down and negotiate, he said, as the crowd chanted freedom from the audience. They told us that liberals, and they put in brackets here for the Breitbart article, libertarians. They told us that liberals or libertarians were cute, but that we couldn't get any votes, and that we're not going to defeat the left. Well, we shall see about that again. Have they awakened a sleeping giant, or will the giant continue to sleepwalk into slavery? That's what we're going to see. And once people start to wake up, once people start to say, and this is what I'm hopeful about, if we can shine the light on what these genetic injections have done to harm people, and a lot of people, so many people have been harmed by this and so quickly that they cannot deny the connection. We all know what the connection is. As hard as they are trying with propaganda, all that does is discredit their propaganda mouthpieces. And when people see their family members and now their children being injured by this toxic poison, that's going to get people really angry. You just watch. It's coming. There's a massive tsunami. Massive tsunami. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping and let people know what is happening with the show. We've had a change. Some of you have noticed it and commented on it. We have, I guess most people listen to the show on podcast and listen to the audio, and they download it. And we have two sources for that. One of them is hosted by Podbean, and we call that the real David Knight Show, because for 3 months I couldn't get my name back from Alex. That was originally had a podcast that was called the David Knight Show. And basically, he never gave it back to me. I had somebody who was a friend on the inside who got that taken care of before he left. So we were able to get the David Knight Show back eventually, and that's on Spreaker. And so if you are getting your podcast on, let's say, iTunes or something like that, or the Google platform, you will see both the real David Knight Show and the David Knight Show. It's the same thing. It's just different names. And so, you know, we kept the one going because we didn't want to shut it down. And actually, the larger number of downloads are off of Podbean, which is the real David Knight Show. We have started, we tried to, just to see how it worked, we tried to set them up so they could, allow them to put in ads, pre-roll and post-roll and some mid-roll ads. So we set both of them up to do that. And Podbean, it works a little bit differently because they seem to be only putting ads in and monetizing it for the people who watch it on the Podbean app, which is only about 10% of the audience that's there. And so even though it's a bigger audience by about 50% bigger than Spreaker, Spreaker is just putting ads in that anybody buys. And so we've had some people say, you're getting some kind of crazy ads on your podcast. Google is advertising there and Facebook is advertising there. It's like, fine, I'm fine with that. If they want to advertise, they're welcome to advertise on my show, even though they don't advertise me or welcome me on their platforms. They're welcome to pay for ads there. And it's a little bit of money, but it does help. Now, we have one of the things that I ask people to let us know about is that since I don't really have a rigid time clock here, and I really should do that because there would be more people who would carry me. So we need to work on that. And we will after we get some other things going. And if we have it as a regular schedule, then the ads will not be interrupting me in the middle of a statement, which is what some people have complained about. Something else that some people have complained about, some people are watching on Podbean. This person says, has anybody mentioned having issues with your podcast on Podbean? I've been listening to Podbean since January, never had an issue before until recently, like a week or so ago, which is when this started. I can't always make it through an entire show. It'll just stop and start doing the circling thing like it's trying to download. So nothing I do can get me past that point, even uninstalling the app and re-downloading it. Well, I appreciate you going to all that trouble. I don't know what's causing this, but I did see this email, and I had somebody leave a very angry comment with explicit explicatives saying, fix your audio. I wasn't specific about what the issue was. This person pointed out what the issue was. I didn't really understand what was happening with it. I don't know if that is something to do with the ads not firing properly. I was talking to Travis about it. He thought, well, maybe the ads that they're putting in are maybe at a higher resolution or something, and maybe that's causing some issue. There haven't been a lot of ads that have been done on Podbean. Most of the ads have been put onto Spreaker. So I just want to say we're monitoring the situation. There's something that we can do on our end to try to make sure that it doesn't, it's kind of placing the ads randomly, evidently. They said that they were supposed to look for silence when they put it in, but I guess maybe I have pauses that it picks up as a break and it puts it in the middle of a thought. So we could set this up and force it to do it in particular places. But this person goes on to say, there's nothing I can do to get past that point, even uninstalling the app and re-downloading it. I do have an older phone. I heard you mention that. during the Salenti interview that you may have a move coming up. Is that it? Well, we haven't moved. Nothing has changed on our end except for that. So I'm assuming that may have introduced a problem. So bottom line, the reason I'm saying this is if you have a problem with that, understand that we have different platforms where you can get it. And we will soon have some other platforms as well. You can also listen on Aftermath FM. That's free when it's live, but you can listen there. APS Radio, as you hear, you can hear it there as well. We're on Twitter. We put stuff up, a video of the show up on BitChute and YouTube and Odyssey and Rumble. And we have links to all those places at The David Knight Show. So if you are listening to something that has an ad, I'd appreciate your patience with it as it's happening right now. That's one way that without spending any money, you can help to support the show a little bit. And so we'll have to see how that works out. We may wind up moving it from Podbean. I'm kind of concerned as to when we transfer it from one podcast provider to another. I don't want to have a glitch there that's going to cause people to not be able to get the show. That's my key thing. So that's where we are right now. Real quickly, I want to talk before we get into the announcement by, and there's some key stuff that is coming up about the toxicity of these things. Bayer CEO is saying, it's a genetic treatment. It's genetic therapy. We just didn't want to call it that. And we have Dr. Peter McCullough is calling it what it is. He's calling it a bioweapon, and that's exactly what it is. It is a genetic bioweapon. And so I want to get into both of those, but before I do, real quickly, I just want to talk a little bit about the Rittenhouse trial, because these high-profile trials tell us a lot about our country, don't they? And about our justice system, or so to speak. Yesterday in the afternoon, we had gun charges that were dropped. We had the closing arguments from both the defense as well as the prosecution happened yesterday. And what happened with the gun charge was kind of interesting. They had a law that said that it was illegal if you were under 18 to have a gun. But it didn't just say that. It was a little bit murky in terms of the way the legislation was written. And the judge had, the question had been raised at the beginning of the trial, and the judge had kind of deferred it. So we may come back to that. But he said, I'll allow that for the time being to have that. And that is a misdemeanor charge, to be under 18 and to have a firearm. But in the statute, it said a sawed-off, a short barrel or a sawed-off barrel. And so the when the judge came back to it, he said he was going to look at that as the prevailing definition of that. And so he dismissed the gun charges. And as the Associated Propagandists, AP, say, that count looked like a legal slam dunk. No one contested that he was 17 the night that all this happened back in August of 2020. But his attorneys seized on a subsection of the Wisconsin law that states that the ban on minors possessing dangerous weapons applies to minors armed with rifles or shotguns only if those weapons are short-barreled. Well, I didn't look at the law, but, you know, that's basically what this judge is ruling. He has looked at the law. He said it's a little bit murky, but we'll come back to that later. And then when he threw out the charge, he said, you could have gotten an opinion, an appellate court opinion. And since you didn't do that, he said that to the prosecution. Well, we're just going to throw this out. Now, you have a former federal prosecutor, Turner, who said, the prosecutor should have realized, based on what the judge said at the beginning of the trial, that this was not a settled matter. And they should have headed this off by asking for an appellate court to rule on this or to file more briefs, which is what the judge said yesterday. And when the judge said, when the judge expressed skepticism early, they should have done something to make sure that it's clear. In a case of this magnitude, if I'm the prosecutor and the judge has expressed some skepticism or some doubt about something here, I'm going to do everything I can to sustain that. When you heard early on that there was some doubt, you got to get onto this. Prosecutors could immediately still ask the Court of Appeals to stop the proceedings pending a rule on the charge's validity, but there's no indication yesterday that they were planning on even doing that. So a former district attorney there in Wisconsin, said, well, you're talking about an extremely minor charge. Prosecutors are missing the boat here. This is a homicide charge. We had two individuals who were killed, one who was almost killed, and they're focusing on the possession of a firearm. If the government thought that this was the only count that they could succeed on, wow. He says, wow. And yes, it is true. It is the only one. And to give you an example of a couple of the crazy things that happened in the trial yesterday in the closing arguments, you've got this prosecutor who says that he portrayed these rioters, BLM, Antifa people, he portrayed them as concerned citizens trying to stop an active shooter. I mean, what universe could anybody believe that was the case? He argued that Rittenhouse could not reasonably believe that the first man shot, convicted child rapist Joseph Rosenbaum, would actually disarm him. Binger, the prosecutor, said the crowd was justified in trying to stop him. He said the actions of the mob of rioters who chased him were entirely reasonable, quote unquote. He added the crowd has the right to stop another shooting, he said. And it was right to chase him, to try to take him down. And so the comments from some of the people as they look at this, they say, well, all right, so he's bringing Rittenhouse up on charges for being a vigilante, and yet he is applauding the vigilante moves of the mob. A mob acting as vigilante is a good thing, and they have a right to chase him. This is what he had to say about the character of the convicted child molester who was shot.
He just happens to stumble into it. So what does he do that night? Oh, let me tell you all the awful things Joseph Rosenbaum did. He tipped over a porta potty that had no one in it. He swung a chain. He lit a metal garbage dumpster on fire. Oh, and there's this empty wooden flatbed trailer that they pulled out in the middle of the road and they tipped it over to stop some bearcats and they lit it on fire. Oh, and he said some bad words. He said the N-word.
Now, you want to talk about dumpster fire? That guy's a dumpster fire. They wanted to stop the police, so they took a dumpster, they lit it on fire and turned it over in the street and swung a chain around. He couldn't hit anybody with it, but he was trying, you know. And of course, let's not mention the fact that he's a convicted child molester, because as BLM and Antifa, he ought to be able to get away with anything, right? The guy was a hero. And prosecutor said that Rittenhouse was acting to, quote, save his own skin. Oh, wait a minute. If he says that the defendant was acting to save his own skin, you know what another name for that is? Self-defense. Self-defense. But you are not allowed to engage in self-defense if you have a gun. And pull up the picture, Travis, of Binger pointing the gun. This is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And he was being trolled all over social media. At one point, he pulls the gun up, and he's got his finger on the trigger, and he points it in the courtroom, perhaps at the jury. We'll get to that in a second. I want you to hear what he has to say about self-defense and how you lose the right of self-defense if you have a gun.
Convince you that Joseph Rosenbaum was going to take that gun and use it on the defendant because they know you can't claim self-defense against an unarmed man like this. You lose the right to self-defense when you're the one who brought the gun, when you're the one creating the danger, when you're the one provoking other people. The defendant fired four shots at Joseph Rosenbaum and caused five wounds total.
So if you have a gun, you lose the right of self-defense, he says. Now, that's the whole point of having a gun, is self-defense. This is just beyond crazy. And so everybody was trolling him for pointing the gun with his finger on the trigger in the courtroom. And a lot of people were joking about whether he had been coached by Alec Baldwin. As one headline, Information Liberation says, he puts his finger on the trigger Baldwin style. He doesn't even have the butt of the gun up against his shoulder, really. pretty amazing. This guy has been very entertaining, and hopefully justice will be done. His defense lawyer, Kyle Rittenhouse's defense lawyer, said, "I'm glad my client shot Joseph Rosenbaum." He said, "Kyle shot Joseph Rosenbaum to stop a threat to his person. And I'm glad that he shot him, because if Joseph Rosenbaum had gotten that gun, I don't believe for a minute that he wouldn't have used it against somebody else, including his defendant. Rosenbaum has a criminal record as a convicted child molester, which was not mentioned specifically. The defense was generally able to discuss his character because the prosecution had described him as an innocent bystander." Yeah, he just did a few things like lighting dumpsters on fire and turning them over in the street to stop the police and things like that, you know, that posed no real threat. So he's able to kind of vaguely refer to that. But again, you hear him saying that Rittenhouse provoked the incident simply by having a gun. And that also then by having a gun, he not only provoked the incident, but he lost the argument for self-defense. Meaning that if that were true, not only would you, if you have a gun, you have no right to use it in self-defense, but everybody else has a right, the mob has a right to take it from you and kill you with it. That's what the prosecutor is arguing here. The defense attorney said, he vaguely referred to his being a child sex offender. He said, "Rittenhouse has as much right to go there as anybody else in the city of Kenosha, and to be unmolested by the likes of Joseph Rosenbaum. But if the jury doesn't know that he's a convicted child molester, they won't get that." He also noted that this is a political case with the state looking for somebody to blame the riots on. He said the district attorney's office is marching forward with this case because they need someone to be responsible. They need somebody to put and say, "We did it." He's the person that brought terror to Kenosha. Kyle Rittenhouse is not that person. And so when you look at the aftermath of this, the judge, we've had the jury threatened. We've had the jury intimidated. There have been social media comments saying we're going to photograph the jury and we're going to dox them and they better convict Rittenhouse. The judge himself is now under police protection after getting hundreds of threatening messages, including death threats against him and his family members. This is from PoliceTribune.com. They said the courthouse itself has received hundreds of abusive, menacing emails, letters, postcards, and faxes directed at the circuit judge, Bruce Schroeder. He's also received numerous harassing and threatening emails sent directly to him. Here's the most surprising thing. And I guess this just shows the arrogance of Antifa. These people are sending threatening letters to the judge and to his family. And in many cases, they're signing their real names to it. They're signing their prison warrant right there. Yeah. because they think that as BLM, as Antifa, that nothing will be done to them. Because, you know, nothing was being done to them. It's one of the reasons why you had people coming together to defend their community. That's what Kyle Rittenhouse was doing, because the government would not do anything to these BLM Antifa people. So they believe that they can send death threats to a judge and sign their name to it, and nothing is going to happen. I don't know about that. One particularly disturbing message threatened the lives of Schroeder's children and promised payback and vowed that Rittenhouse won't live long if the jury votes to acquit him. And many of the people signed the messages with their real names. The judge, meanwhile, Judge Schroeder, referenced the, quote, thousands of communications that he received, and he promised that he would deal with the people who sent them. He said, "I wouldn't want to be those people." And let's take a look at Robert Francis O'Rourke, the Irishman, who identifies as Hispanic. He is trans-Hispanic. And I suggest that now that he is going to run for the third time, with three strikes and hopefully he'll be out, But I think that I would like to see some signs for him, like campaign yard signs. And I think they could say, "Let's go Beto," because that really does fit. It actually has like a little, you know, it rhymes. Let's go Beto. Yeah, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who goes by the name Beto. And think about how ridiculous that is. It's like Elizabeth Warren campaigning, putting on all of her yard signs, Pocahontas. And yet that's exactly what Beto does. It's not his name, but he identifies as Hispanic. And so now, after losing his presidential campaign in 2020 and losing 2 years before that to Ted Cruz running for Senate, he is now going to run for governor in Texas. And he has this to say about, this is a guy who has openly bragged about how he wants to confiscate all ARs, right? And yet he says that the policies that we're seeing in Texas today on abortion, on guns, on schools, on the electricity grid, he said these are fringe policies. Fringe policies. His positions are fringe policies. Quite frankly, the only thing I agree with him on in terms of horrible policies, he says masks, on abortion, on guns, on schools, on the electricity grid. These are fringe policies and they're incompetence. Look, the electricity grid is a big issue. But he'd make it even worse. he would implement the policies that messed up the grid during the Great Freeze last year, last winter. He would extend that and make it much, much worse. They point out that Abbott may be vulnerable. They say only 45% of Texans have a favorable view of him. I don't have a favorable view of him, but let me just say, he may be vulnerable, but he is not vulnerable to Beto. Not to Beto. The Republican Governors Association said Beto 2.0, that was, as 2.0 was when he was running for president. Beto 2.0 vowed to confiscate the firearms of law-abiding citizens. He pledged to tear down physical barriers along the border, and he supported regulations that would kill over a million jobs across the state and raise taxes and the cost of living on families and small businesses. There's no telling how far Beto 3.0 will go in his vain attempt to stay relevant after running out of promotions to chase in Washington. Well, let me just say, the reason that Abbott is vulnerable is because of actions that he allowed to be done and that stood for, that did a lot of these same things to people. And yet, that's the sad state that we're in, is that there's not really any freedom alternative. Maybe we need to get somebody from Argentina to come here and run. Beto, as Babylon Bee puts it, announces a bid to lose the Texas governor's race. That's exactly what it will be. And he launches this run with a renewed pledge to take away AR-15s. He had been saying when he was campaigning for president, listen to this quote. He said that he'd gone to gun shows in Conway, Arkansas, where he claimed that numerous gun owners came up to him and said of their AR-15s and their AK-47s, quote, "I would willingly give that up, and I would cut it to pieces. I don't need this weapon to hunt, to defend myself. It is a weapon of war." Well, I just have to ask if they felt that strongly about their guns. Why are they at a gun show? And if they do, in fact, own AR-15s and AK-47s, and they're willing to cut them up to pieces, what's stopping them? I mean, none of this rings true, does it? This guy is as dishonest as they come. Total fabrication, but that's exactly what we expect from these Democrats. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and take a look at the toxic meds. We're going to be joined later in the program by Dr. Mark McDonald, psychologist who's just written a book, The United States of Fear, and he gets into the true science of what happened over the last 18 months, and that is behavioral science. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
I don't mind if you big, I don't mind if you small. My juice so magic, one size fits all. I'm Big Farmer and I'm here for your health. Stop me, no harm. I just want to help. My juice is free. I know you'll be back again and again and again. I'm Big Farmer and I'm here for your help. Stop me, no harm. I just want to help. My juice is free for you, my friend. Cause I know you'll be back again and again and again. Protecting you to death with their ungodly toxic potions. You are not their experiment. Resist. Do not comply. Rise up.
That's right. It is bioterrorism. It's not me saying it. Excellent song that's saying it, but it is true. Nevertheless, it is Dr. Peter McCullough who is saying this. And understand that Dr. Peter McCullough has had more experience with this than anybody has, including Fauci. He's treated a lot of patients. He's done a lot of papers. And he is somebody who is a cardiologist, an epidemiologist. He has excellent credentials. And he has a long history of this. Cardiologist, internist, epidemiologist based in Dallas, Texas. One of the foremost experts on COVID-19. He has 51 peer-reviewed publications on COVID-19. He has treated COVID patients as part of his practice. He has recovered from the infection himself. He is a former professor of medicine. And he says, and he is right about this, this is bioterrorism. He says the spike protein is pathogenic. Now, what do we mean when we say pathogenic? Now, I've talked about how the theory behind a vaccine, this is not a vaccine. The theory behind a vaccine is that you're going to expose the body to a weakened or dead pathogen so that its immune system can be trained and then can handle a live, active infection of real pathogens. That's not what this is. You see, the term pathogen, if you look at the etymology of the word, pathogen means really a producer of poison. It's generally, an organism that's going to produce a disease. So it literally means a producer of poison. And yet what this genetic modification does is it makes you a pathogen. It makes you a producer of poison, because the spike protein is a poison. This is not something that's dead. It's not something that is weakened. You're not having something like that injected into your body so that your immune system can be trained. You know, if you have a therapeutic or something like that, is something that treats the disease or the condition to mitigate it or to cure it. That's not the purpose of a vaccine, and people are really confused about that. The purpose of a vaccine is to train your immune system. It's one of the reasons why people are so confused about natural immunity. If you've been exposed to the actual thing and recovered, you have natural immunity that's going to last for a lifetime. That's the way God designed the body. That's the way that it works. We've always understood that, and yet, through a massive propaganda campaign, they have been able to convince people that that's not the way the body works, and yet it is. He goes on to say, this spike protein itself is pathogenic. Everything that we have learned about the spike protein, says Dr. Peter McCullough, everything we've learned about the spike protein since the release of the vaccines is bad, 100% bad. The spike protein in itself is lethal to some through mechanisms which are now very well accepted and understood in human medicine. He said, furthermore, that this lethality was not a mistake, and that the reason for the autoimmune attacks that some people have experienced after accepting an mRNA vaccine, he said, the spike protein is lethal to the cells where it is produced. And I've pointed out this as well, by their own admission. By sending in the mRNA, it works like a virus itself. It replicates and it basically takes over your cell and tells your cell to create these spike proteins. In the process of doing that, the cell destroys itself. That's the way a virus works. That's the way cancer works. And that's why you have a lot of viruses that are associated with cancer eventually, because you're hacking the genetic replication. He says, when it is expressed on the cell surface, it invites an attack, and that's what causes these autoimmune attacks in the organs. And by the way, there's a lot of evidence shows that it's not just expressed on the cell surface, but it is freely traveling through the body as well. He says, the spike protein itself, as many of you understand, is also the target and the product of intentional gain-of-function research in the Wuhan lab. He said, so in the most kind of perverted way, it's hard to say this, but he said the vaccine is, in a sense, giving people a dose of a product of bioterrorism by injection. This is political terrorism, and it is bioterrorism. Terrorism is defined as the use of fear or force or what to achieve a political goal, and that's what they're doing. They're using fear. They're using force to achieve a political goal. Their political goal is the Great Reset. It is their absolute totalitarian power. This is terrorism. It's political terror, and it is bioterror designed to kill. McCullough was adamant that the available COVID vaccines are dangerous. His presentation included documentation that all age groups are more likely to die from vaccines than from COVID-19, and that the vaccinated are just as much a virus transmission threat to others as the vaccinated. He also stated that the excessive death tolls and the resulting numbers of permanently disabled Americans due to the COVID shots exceeds the same categories from the Iraq War. Isn't it interesting that we were lied into this COVID war and the Iraq war? We were lied into that. And the lies were about weapons of mass destruction. The main difference is that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But in the COVID war, the vaccine itself is a weapon of mass destruction, a WMD. McCullough, as I pointed out, is a cardiologist, internist, epidemiologist, former professor of medicine, who's, you know, basically been put out of that post because he decided that his integrity and the health of people was more important than his position in the establishment. And he's going to speak truth even if it costs him everything. He said, we've tricked our bodies into producing a dangerous foreign protein. Points out that Pfizer, Moderna, and I just want to stress this as well, it's not just the two of them that are doing mRNA. This is genetic modification by all of these vaccines. As they point out in this article from LifeSite, the Johnson & Johnson is a DNA shot that uses the adenovirus. But so is AstraZeneca. So those two, you know, so all four of them, even though we only got three of them that are being used in the U.S., all four of them are modifying DNA. Because I know they said, well, no, the mRNA does not modify your DNA. Well, they said that was impossible. It only copies it. Well, if it copies it, it can make an error, but it can be used to modify it as well, as Thomas Jefferson University showed in an experiment. And we have now had Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, saying, we're going to be using mRNA to fix your DNA. Oh, well, I didn't think you could do that. You were just telling us not even a year ago that that was a conspiracy theory. Now it's a new product. So he says, we almost kind of turn our own cells into a virus, if you will. That's what I've said from the very beginning. And see, this is another thing for you when you're talking about, and we've had a lot of people who have requested that, you know, can you give me a sample form for a religious exemption? And I've talked about the many different ways because, again, religious exemption, if you have sincerely held religious beliefs, that is your best opportunity to push back against this. And when I pointed out the other day what Tina and Mike sent me, they said, I read this yesterday, I said, your shows helped us to help our sons to get their religious exemptions at GE. But one of them, I didn't read this yesterday, one of them was able to get several others filling it out as well. And a lot of them were not even going to try. I talked about the nurse who said the same thing. She said, a lot of these people just gave up figuring that there was no point in doing this. But I got mine, she said, and I helped seven other people to get theirs as well. And so I've had a lot of it's like multiple requests to try to, sometimes it takes me a while to get through the emails, but as many as we can, I have put out, sent samples to people who have asked for it. But I would just say this. This is when you want to talk about, you know, they want to say, well, have you ever objected to any vaccines before? Just understand this is not a vaccine. This doesn't work like any other vaccine. I'm going to tell you here in a minute what the CEO of Bayer said. He said this is a genetic therapy. You just have to understand that part of what you would object to with this religiously, and this was in one of the example letters I got from an individual who's in the military, but, you know, don't forget to talk about the fact that this is hacking God's DNA to produce foreign material. This is genetic modification. So that is another aspect to object to this from a religious, from an ethical standpoint. I mean, you could object to that even if you weren't religious, but they're throwing out those objections for medical and for political and for libertarian reasons. They're throwing out those altogether. That's why I'm focusing on the religious stuff. Believe me, I don't believe that anybody has got a right to force you to take anything. And I'm just saying, you know, from a pragmatic standpoint, this is the area where you're most likely going to get some success in it. Anyway, so he says, so this is the first time in human medicine where we've actually had our bodies tricked into producing a foreign protein, and then to have our body attack our own cells with the hope of creating immunity. He said, and this process may spread throughout the body repeatedly for up to 3 months. He said, normally mRNA lasts for only a few seconds and then it's dissolved. But this mRNA, we believe, lasts in the human body for at least a month. And we think that it lasts maybe 3 months. But they know that it lasts for at least a month. Now, think about this. This is not normal mRNA. Normal mRNA lasts for a few seconds. This persists for at least a month. They think up to 3 months. The biodistribution of this is throughout the body. And it accumulates in organs, specifically in female reproductive organs. But it also creates, and this is why we're seeing so much heart disease. He said, though the technology behind these processes has been around for decades, these vaccines are really, quote, failed gene transfer technology products. Quote, failed gene transfer technology products. What are they transferring genetically to you? What are they doing to hack God's creation? You have no, this is not like any other vaccine. It's not a vaccine. It doesn't expose you to a dead or weakened pathogen. But, you know, again, staying on the religious side of this, you're hacking God's DNA to produce foreign material into your body. That's not something that is legitimate. Just like it's not legitimate to cannibalize human beings for medicine. And then, of course, you can talk about the mark of the beast and how similar this looks to it and how you don't think that whether this is the mark of the beast or not, you should not be taking the chance with this. You should not be cooperating with something that will help to usher it in if it is not, in fact, the mark of the beast. So again, this is Dr. Peter McCullough, a guy who's a cardiologist, an epidemiologist, a medical professor, a guy who has done 51 peer-reviewed papers on this, who has treated many, many patients, who has had it himself. And as he studied this, he says this is, quote, a failed gene transfer technology product. We have never injected anything like this in the human body to make a foreign protein, which we have now learned is, frankly, dangerous. He highlighted a June 2021 paper that he co-authored with an international team of 56 scientists. And in it, the title of it is SARS-CoV-2 Mass Vaccination, Urgent Questions on Vaccine Safety that Demand Answers from the International Health Agencies, Regulatory Authorities, Governments, and Vaccine Developers. They raise many concerns, including studies showing that the pathogenic spike protein circulates freely in the body. They also worried about the long-term side effects. They said there's been no testing to see if the mRNA or the adenoviral DNA from the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, if they incorporate into the human genome. Yeah, imagine that. Are they going to make lasting changes to the DNA? And let me just say this. When we talk about one of the reasons that it caused so much of a stir in China when they said that they were doing a genetic modification of babies and of fetuses, they said, well, you know, we've identified a particular genetic sequence that we've associated with a particular disease, and we have modified these babies this way genetically. That's called a seed modification. If you do a genetic modification to a child at an early age, and the earlier the age, the more likely all of these changes are going to be permanent and passed on to future generations. That's one of the things at the beginning of the book by Daniel Suarez, Change Agent. This very, very good scene. I mean, that scene needs to be dramatized for an introduction to people about what the pitfalls of genetic modification are and how it can be sold to people. At that point in time, the idea is that there's a black market of genetic modification. And although it's been legally prohibited, the black market, the science has been developed, and it's pretty specific, and it works and so forth very reliably. And so they were just focusing on the ethical issues of it. So just in his science fiction world, you imagine that there is known, proven, effective, working technology that is illegal and is on the black market. And so you have a man and a wife, and in his setup, they go to this guy who is selling this in the black market, and one of the parents is reluctant, and the other one wants it. And so he says, you know, we've got all these different characteristics that we can do. We can change the DNA to make the child healthier, give them a longer lifespan. We can give them athletic capability. We can give them intellectual capability, and on. So he goes down all these different things. You know, just check off the ones that you want, and you can pay for them, and we'll do that to the kid. And the one parent is like, well, I'm kind of reluctant to do this. He says, well, just understand this. You're not the only one that's doing this. You see, there's other parents who are coming here all the time, and they're enhancing their kids. And so your kid is going to, if you just allow your kid to develop naturally, your kid is going to be at a big disadvantage to all of these enhanced, genetically enhanced kids. Your child will be a slave to them. And not only that, but your grandchildren and your great grandchildren will be slaves. You are not just fixing and enhancing your child, but you're enhancing all the subsequent generations, because if we do it at this point in time, that trait will be passed on. Sometimes, as an adult, they can do temporary changes, but because there are so many cells in the human body, the normal cells will overcome that change. But when you are developing and you make these seed changes, that's why they have been so careful to restrict this kind of experimentation on babies, especially developing preborn babies. But what are they doing now? What is Fauci focusing on? What is Pfizer focusing on? I'm telling you, this is not just for money. They're now focusing on getting the children earlier and earlier and earlier. They're focusing on pregnant women because they want to modify them genetically at a very early age. His June 2021 paper, as Dr. Peter McCullough, makes it clear that data safety monitoring boards, they call them, it's a term, DSMB, data safety monitoring boards and event adjudication committees, EACs, should be enacting risk mitigation, he said. If the DSMBs and the EACs do not do so, we will call for a pause in mass vaccination, said the authors. This is this paper with 50 other scientists writing it. And they said, and if these committees do not even exist, then the vaccination should be halted immediately. The FDA and the CDCs are sponsors of this program, he said. That's right, they're sponsors. They're co-owners of this stuff. They have intellectual property rights in this. They're not. It's not just regulatory capture. These people are, you've got, it's bad enough when you've got Trump's FDA guys, you know, first you got Gottlieb, he's now sitting on, you know, he's there at Pfizer, and the other guy, Hahn, has gone to Moderna. That's bad enough, this revolving door. We've always had that. But in these particular things, you've got the NIH and other people at the CDC who are actually participating financially in profits for these products that they are then supposed to regulate, and they're participating in the profits of this. They have every incentive not to stop this because they'd like to be a billionaire too. We've created a lot of billionaires, some of them just by fiat, by the Operation Warp Speed cash. They're business partners. They've got patents in this. They've got, if they're a high-level official, they've got golden parachutes so they can go work for the company, like Gottlieb, like Hahn. He says, now those groups, talking about different groups of people in these clinical trials, he said, we never, ever, ever test the product out on the market. But we did it on this thing. He says it should really raise great concern in your mind that we would have a physicians group like the American College of Obstetrics say that pregnant women should take the vaccine with no randomized trial data. Again, why did we, the FDA has always bragged about the fact that the thalidomide baby situation did not happen here like it did in Great Britain because we took our time. You know, we have a long period where we watch what happens to people when they're exposed to a drug. In the UK, they had a drug, and I don't even remember what thalidomide was used for. But when they gave it to pregnant women, they started having babies who didn't have arms and legs. They had little flippers. Yeah, they're paraplegics, quadriplegics. It was horrific. And they always said, so we take our time. We do due diligence here in America. We have the FDA. And people were complaining and saying, well, you know, if somebody's got a life-threatening disease, you ought to give them the decision, let them make the decision that they want to take that risk. And I agree with that position. But now we've gone just the other way. Now we've got the warp speed, right, where we have Trump who destroyed safety, Trump who destroyed science, Trump who destroyed medicine, and the rule of law as well. Because he said, we've never had a situation where we've skipped all this. And you've even got the American College of Obstetrics saying pregnant women need to take this. He says that is, Peter McCullough says, that is a fracture. It is a fracture of good medical practice. It's a fracture of regulatory compliance and of jurisprudence. That is a fracture of the fiduciary relationship between doctors and patients. Something is wrong when that happens, and historians are going to write about that for a long time. And you know whose face is going to be there on that page? Donald Trump, pushing, 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 threatening. You do this today, or I'm going to fire you. You approve this at the FDA, or I'm going to fire you, he said to Hahn. And so did Mark Meadows. Their faces are going to be right there when we talk about this mass Kool-Aid event that we've had. He said, I can tell you when the products are released that they're then constantly surveilled. Why? Because we have to adjust the dosage. We don't know what it is. He said, we have to adjust the timing of it, and we have to figure out if it's going to interact with existing drugs. All of this stuff is a process. That's why you run these tests for a long time. If it doesn't work out perfectly, and it never does, he says this idea of, voila, we're going to do this in 2 months, and I'm going to hand you a product, and it's ready to go with no adjustments. He says that's extremely concerning, and yet that's exactly what Fauci was plotting, along with the head of BARDA. He said, I've played that clip for you many times. How do we go from a situation where we take 10 years to do a drug to where we just do a drug and we tell everybody in the world, you're going to take this drug? That's what they said. Everybody in the world, you're going to take this drug. And Fauci said, well, we have to do it from the inside. We have to do it disruptively. And we have to do it iteratively. And they did. He says, we already had in January of this last year, we already had 182 deaths due to COVID. And he said, we had vaccinated 27 million people. Oh, well, you know, no problem. It's rare, right? Well, no. He said, think about this. Normally, across 70 different vaccines with 278 million shots a year, that is 10 times more than we did in this. I mean, we're talking about in just a month or so. Because we're talking about January when this went out. January the 22nd. You see, these things, the deaths had already started to pile up from the vaccine program under Trump. Now, Biden was sworn in January the 20th. What was Trump doing there? Oh, that's right. He's doing the Stop the Steal fundraiser. He raised $250 million, $250 million. He and the RNC. While people were dying from his rushed vaccine, he couldn't be bothered with that. So he said, we vaccinated 27 million people with this. We had 182 deaths in a month. Typically, we'll have 278 million vaccines a year, and there'll be 158 deaths reported. 158. They already had 182 in 1 month, not in a year. So we're talking about a situation where, let's just say it's about the same, even though it's more. Even though 182 is more than, you know, it's about 30% more, or 20% more, I guess. But let's just say they're the same. But you typically have, you know, it's about the same as what you would see with 10 times the number of doses over 12 times the time. And so we're talking about something that was happening at a rate that was 120 times higher. Trump didn't stop it. Biden didn't stop it. They didn't care. They're focused on their political careers and who gets to sit in the Oval Office. He said, if we would have had, and we should have had, a DSMB, an oversight board, or a human ethics board, or an external critical event committee, the program would have been shut down in February. He said, the VAERS system, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, is supposed to be an early warning system. It's supposed to warn us when something is going wrong. And that warning did happen, and it happened in January, said Dr. Peter McCullough. By the time you got to April, we were way over the line. In April, it was clear that we had unequivocal, unambiguous, cannot be argued safety problems with the vaccine. And he goes, but now we are shockingly at 26,000 Americans now permanently disabled after the vaccines. And I mean, these are not the people who have been injured. You know, the injuries are much, much higher than that. This is only about 10%. Of the reported injuries. About 10% of the people are permanently disabled. Like that one lady who was maybe in her 30s, if do you recall? She was crying, and she was a black woman crying. I'll never forget that. She said, I got it, and 2 days later, I'm out in my yard walking. All of a sudden, my legs just gave out, and I haven't been able to use them since. She said, the doctors told me to get used to it. And she started crying. I'm not going to get used to this. I'm not going to back down from criticizing these self-interested, narcissistic, criminal, mafia politicians, and that includes Donald Trump, especially Donald Trump. He was at the beginning of this. He is still promoting this. He is still running for president. And he is still being worshipped by the people who are afraid of what he has produced, afraid of his crowning achievement, and yet they support this man? What is the matter with him? At least people understand what Biden is. People don't understand what Trump is. Anyway, he said, we're shockingly at 26,000 Americans permanently disabled with the vaccines. That is what the CDC is telling us. Permanently disabled. He says, now who answers for that? That's more than a war. That was more than was disabled in the Iraq War. These are permanently disabled Americans. He said, no wonder people are protesting. He countered that the mainstream media's assertion that it cannot be known if the vaccines were causal factors of the thousands of deaths reported in VAERS. According to a June 2021 study by Scott McLaughlin and others, they conducted this, quote, with separate independent adjudicators. They found that 86% of the deaths had no other explanation than the vaccines. But then Peter McCullough said this. He said, you know, somebody challenged me one time on that. They said, and there was an article that I didn't talk about yesterday. It was put up, and of course it was done by the mainstream media, and it was put on the Drudge Report. It says, how is it that it's so hard to connect these things to the vaccines? And the whole purpose of that article was to say, see, we can never know. We can never know. It's wrong to blame the vaccines because we know that the vaccines are a miracle. It's a scientific miracle, and they're 100% safe and 100% effective, as we've always been told repeatedly by Fauci and others. So, you know, just forget about it. Go take your shot. But this is what Dr. McCullough said. He said, somebody challenged me one time, said, well, Dr. McCullough, how do you know if a death is due to a vaccine or not? And I said, you know, I don't even care. If it's within 30 days of the administration of a product, do you know that by pharmacological vigilance rules, we don't even care about causality? All we care about is that it happened within the window of concern, and that starts us investigating. And it hasn't started us investigating. They're just waving their hands through this. You got 16,000 people who've been reported dead in America. You've got more than that in Europe. You've got more than got about 30,000 people in Europe. Just under 30,000 and just under 2 million people damaged with adverse reactions. And that's only half of the countries in Europe that you're talking about. I mean, you're getting close to 50,000 people killed. And we're not even through a year yet. He goes, all you have to know is that this happened during a window of concern, and that's should make you, if you're doing due diligence, that should make you investigate. He said this should have been investigated for months. And that's probably one of the biggest scandals of Americans who lost their lives in the history of our country. He then highlighted a peer-reviewed study done by Ronald Kostoff, which concluded that you're about five times as likely to die of the vaccine than you are if you take your risk with COVID-19. And he said, and that's especially for those who are 65 or older. He said there was no age group where the odds of taking the vaccine were favorable. It was actually worse even for those who were over age 65. It was worse for the most vulnerable, those over 65. McCullough emphasized that people who intentionally choose not to get the vaccine and were later hospitalized with COVID had, quote, actually made the smarter choice. They're going with a lower risk. That's what, all you can do in life, right? The best you can do is to look at the risk and go with a lower risk thing. Doesn't mean that you're not going to be hit by some, you know, you could have a, you know, a piano could drop on you as you walk out the door or something, you know, of a building. The chances of that are pretty low. So you walk out of the building. Anything can happen, but you go with the smarter choices. Discussing the dangers of myocarditis in children who are receiving the genetic transfer injections. He said when the FDA and the CDC reviewed this in June, they only had 200 cases. And they disingenuously said two things. First, they said, well, it's rare. He said, we never say that in safety work. We never say that something is rare. Because if we didn't check everybody for it, they only had 200 cases that people brought forward. So he says, we're not going out there and checking everybody for this. These are people who are coming to us and saying we got a problem. So we don't know how many other people have similar problems at some level or developing that problem because we're not checking everybody. The second thing they said is it's mild. 90% of the kids in the initial CDC review were hospitalized. Do you know, he said, what it takes to hospitalize a 17-year-old kid and to take him out of school? No, that is not mild. He said this is basically wrongdoing by officials and authority. They should be concerned. They should have been conservative. They should have said, listen, this is serious. These kids are being hospitalized. This could be the tip of the iceberg. And he has, and now here's where we are today. Not 200 cases, 10,000 cases of myocarditis. They had 200 back in June. Here we are, 5 months later, 10,000. Who in the world said that this was rare? Think about that, 10,000 people. That's more people that show up than show up to a Biden rally, isn't it? Biden's never spoken to 10,000 people. So I'm telling you, 10,000 cases of myocarditis are real and they're serious and they're affecting young people, kids who are trying to get to school, trying to go to college. Very importantly, what Tracy Hogue said, showed, is that in her analysis now, months later, 86% of these kids are being hospitalized. It has never been mild. It wasn't mild in June, and it's certainly not mild in September. He said, there is no way this could be called a crisis of the unvaccinated. This rather can be called a crisis of vaccine failure. For the first time, we have a 99% Delta as a single strain in the U.S. Can you imagine? We have a virus now that is completely monotonic. Why do we have a 99% Delta? Because Delta is thriving in the nose and the mouths of those who are vaccinated. Thriving, he said. By the way, I reported last week how there was a company who had come up with a nasal flush, and they were getting dramatic treatment improvements because the virus is thriving in the nose and the mouth, and they were flushing it out of the nose. Just that action, basically. But the FDA wants to shut that down. Why? They want to keep this thing going. He said, so the idea is that you're going to take the COVID vaccine and suddenly you're going to go to the workplace and now you're not going to be a threat to somebody? He says that's totally erroneous. I was honored to be the first author for these studies that basically taught the country, first off, how to treat COVID-19 early to prevent hospitalization and death. He said, it was the most important thing I've ever done in my career. I've got 650 publications in peer-reviewed literature, but not a single one of them had this kind of worldwide impact. Those papers have been downloaded and utilized millions and millions of times, and yet now they're coming after the doctors and practitioners who are helping people, punishing them. Before we go to a break and bring on our guests to talk about the psychological damage of all this, there was an interesting article on WND.com. It was an op-ed piece by Wayne Allen Root. I believe he was involved in politics or something, the Libertarian Party at some point in time. But he did an interview with Trump. He said, it's my second interview, and I've got good news and I've got bad news. He said, the first time I had a chance to interview him a few months ago, I asked Trump if he'd consider becoming Speaker of the House when the GOP reclaims it in 2022. This is something that some conservatives are pushing, which I think is absolutely ludicrous. He certainly does not have the capability to understand the intricacies of an institution like that and to pull the kind of levers that need to be pulled and to make the kind of alliances that need to be made. He's very much a dictatorial executive type. Anyway, he says, this time around, I asked Trump point blank if he's going to be running again for president 2024. Although he can't officially give a yes because of campaign finance regulations, he made it pretty darn clear that he's going to be running for president in 2024. He got as close to yes as you can get to without saying yes. And he goes, and by the way, he will have my full support. Trump is the best president of my lifetime, even better than Ronald Reagan, he thinks. He says, and he was hands down and no debate the best president in history for Israel and the Jewish people. What? What is that about? I mean, I talked about that with Trump, saying, yeah, you know, Congress used to be owned by Israel, and rightfully so, he said. Well, since when do we have a foreign government rightfully own our Congress? Anyway, he says, although Trump is a big fan of the COVID-19 vaccine, he said, I did get him to clearly state that he's against the vaccine mandates, and that's another feather in his cap. I mean, he's doing everything he can to cheerlead for him, but he goes, now to the bad news. I thought that was the bad news that he... Anyway, so now the news gets worse. He says, now to the bad news. There is only one issue where I've ever disagreed with Trump, and I know a majority of Trump voters are on my side. The raw truth, Trump is dead wrong about the vaccine, writes Wayne Allenroot. Big fan. He's a fan. Interviewed him twice. Don't say anything bad about the big man here. Trump is dead wrong about the vaccine, he said, and I believe it's the only issue that could derail his excellent shot at winning another presidential election. I believe Trump needs to get ahead of this issue before it comes back to haunt him, before he's taken off to a Nuremberg trial, frankly. He could still pretend that he's just that he was duped, that he was a fool, an idiot. And that's the way that Wayne Allenroot is trying to hold this out and say, you know, you could say that. He says, Trump gets all the credit in the world for showing the tremendous leadership skills of a five-star general. He made the vaccine happen at a speed that no expert thought possible. Bravo. Really? Why don't you listen, Wayne, to what Dr. Peter McCullough just pointed out? That's the problem. Skipping the testing is the biggest problem. We knew that this was happening, and they're still not doing anything about it. They never did. They never wanted to. It was never the plan. And you understand this, and all the Trump voters understand it. Is Trump that stupid that he still doesn't understand this? I don't think he's stupid. I think he's a traitor. I think he's sold out to Big Pharma. I think he's sold out to the globalists. I think he's pushing this. I've played for you many times. The Judge Jeanine interview, where she said, look at this. You know, we got kids are getting this, and our heroes are being fired. Don't you think you should have fired Fauci instead? Oh, it's not Fauci's fault. It's the Biden administration. Yeah. So Wayne Allenroot says the problem is the vaccine's a failure. Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. So why Bravo? Right. He said the countries and the counties that have the highest vaccination rates have the highest number of COVID cases. It was supposed to stop the spread of COVID. Latest data shows that vaccinated individuals often have higher viral loads than unvaccinated people. All right. So we know that it's not effective. As I pointed out, we got about 30,000 people in half of the countries of the EU that track it. 30,000 people died. 3 million have had strong adverse effects. And in the U.S., we've got about half of those figures, and we've got about 30,000 people who have been permanently disabled from this. Who knows how many people, if you count myocarditis, are permanently disabled. And it goes worse for some. The vaccine itself is deadly and dangerous. Trump isn't a doctor or scientist. He didn't create the vaccine. He listened to medical experts. They told him it would save the world. Well, does he still not know? I mean, you figured this out. Maybe you should be president, or maybe anybody should be president except him. Everybody else in the Trump that's supporting Trump knows this. So why don't they run for president? I'd like to have. He had 4 years. He failed. And he betrayed us. Don't follow him. He said, in my opinion, Trump should be saying, I made the vaccine happen at a speed no medical expert thought possible. That's the problem. I was trying to save millions of American lives. I'm proud of my role. But when it comes to the safety of vaccines, I listened to Dr. Fauci and the CDC. He lied to me. He misrepresented these things. If I had it to do over, I would never have listened to Fauci. Now there's many legitimate questions and concerns about these vaccines. So ask yourself, Wayne, why isn't he saying this? You're not the only one who's been telling him to do this. A lot of people have been telling him to do this. So why isn't he doing this? Dr. Scott Atlas, who was there. Dr. Scott Atlas was the only person who wanted to look at the science. And he's now written a book. The book is A Plague Upon Our House. And in it, he talks about how he was disgusted at the reactions of Fauci, of Birx, of Redfield, who was then the director of the CDC. He said he presented data. He's presented studies showing that schools should be reopened, that the lockdowns are not working. He said, I presented all this evidence, and when I finished, there was silence. Nobody offered any contrary data. Nobody spoke of any scientific studies that would contradict what I had just given them with my scientific studies. No one even mentioned the discredited Korea study that he knew about. He was ready to debate this. Okay, this is very different from what you guys are doing. I know it's different from what you understand, but here's what I found. Here's the studies I found. They don't even care. It's never been about science. This has never been about debate or skepticism or empiricism or the numbers, really. This has always been about, I say, this is what we're going to do. This is Simon says, Fauci says, Trump says. That's what this has always been. And so Dr. Scott Atlas said, zero comments from Dr. Birx, nothing from Dr. Fauci. And as always, not a single mention by Birx or Fauci about the serious harms of school closures. In my mind, this was bizarre. I was the only one in the room with detailed knowledge of the literature, was I? Why was I the only one considering the data on such an important topic and doing it with a critical eye? Were the others simply accepting the bottom lines and conclusions without any analytical evaluation? Weren't they supposed to be expert medical scientists? I waited. And they said, and then Birx told him that his opinion was, quote, out of the mainstream. Said he was part of a fringe group of people who believed that we shouldn't have the lockdown. Meanwhile, she insisted that all experts agreed with her. I shook my head, thinking of some of the world-class epidemiologists who agreed with me, John Ioannidis and Jay Bhattacharya of Stanford, Martin Kulldorff at Harvard, Carl Hennigan, and Sunitra Gupta of Oxford. I wondered if she or Fauci had ever read a single publication by any of them. He said he wrote that he explained the numbers that children did not have a significant risk of illness or death from the virus. He cited statistics from New York City, California, and elsewhere, documenting that while also noting data from Sweden showing zero deaths despite schools not closing, also not imposing mask mandates. He said the icing on the cake was the evidence that almost all coronavirus transmissions to children come from adults, not the other way around. They found zero instances of children passing this on to adults. It was never about the science. He was always simply window dressing. None of his advice was ever taken. Trump took Fauci's advice. He did everything Fauci said. He developed the vaccines. He even took remdesivir when he said he got sick. Fauci was his doctor. We'll be right back with a real doctor, a psychologist who knows what the real problem is. United States of Fear is the name of the book. Dr. Mark McDonald will be joining us right after this short break.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is still beating.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and the book is United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. And our guest is Dr. Mark McDonald. I had the pleasure of interviewing him a few months ago, and he said he had a book coming out. I said, definitely get in contact with me when that book comes out, because he is spot on. He really does understand the key thing that has happened here. In the introduction to the book, said we've actually had two pandemics, and we've had the the viral one that is happening, and we've had the psychological one, a pandemic of fear. And I would even say a third one. We've had a political pandemic of government becoming a cancer. But the key thing is the pandemic of fear, and that's what he's had a lot of experience with. So joining us now is Dr. Mark McDonald. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be on again.
Yeah, you had some amazing stories last time we talked about what this is doing to children. I mean, what is that really what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I am a child psychiatrist. So when my children in my practice began to collapse from anxiety, depression, problems with nighttime urination, separation anxiety, all at once, I knew something was wrong. And when I began to look more closely outside my practice here in Los Angeles, where I live and work, I could see that, yes, there was a medical problem afoot. People were catching a virus. They were sometimes getting moderately sick or ill with it. Very rarely were people that were healthy being hospitalized or dying. And I thought, there just isn't something here that's matching up. I feel like the children in my practice are a kind of mirror onto society. And I began to look more widely, and it became quite obvious to me that it wasn't just children. It was also adults, older adults, retirees. It was essentially the entire population that was caught up in something that was far more than just a virus. It was something psychological. And as you indicated just now, it really moves and has moved really far beyond the psychological into a rather oppressive political force that seeks to control us and actually manage the way that we think and behave.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. I've been calling this from the very beginning when I started seeing the bizarre behavior of people centering around these masks and lockdowns and, you know, wiping everything down and staying away from people. I said, we've become an OCD nation. It's really kind of an obsessive compulsive disorder. We're constantly wiping everything and stay away from me, you know. And I mean, there's just so many different psychological aspects of this. We got people who are afraid to go outdoors in the market, agoraphobic, and all of these different things. It was bizarre, but it has been used for political purposes. And I think it's interesting because you're a child psychologist to focus on the children. Because they really are the canaries in the coal mine. We see things happening to children much earlier, whether it is mental or whether it is physical. They show these types of things much earlier than adults do, don't they?
They actually do. It's interesting when you mention the canary in the coal mines. I often bring this up with parents of children in my practice who are considering divorcing. And they're often in a huge dispute and argument about when and how we should tell our child that mom and dad are splitting up. And I look them in the eyes and I say, you think he doesn't already know that?
Oh, yeah.
You think he hasn't noticed that every day for the last 8 years, daddy kisses mommy goodbye in the morning when he goes to work? And about a month ago, he stopped doing that. You think he didn't notice that?
Mm-hmm.
They notice things.
Yeah.
They are quite aware of what's happening in a household. They are very sensitive, just like cats and dogs, pets. They know when something's off. Children have a very fine-tuned radar. And I think it's biological. It's for survival. They don't have the intelligence, the executive function, the wisdom that adults do, but they have a radar like primitive creatures do, because they are kind of primitive, you know, they're still developing.
That's right.
And so they sense for survival's sake when something is off. That's why the kids in my practice were the first to recognize that something was weird. Something just wasn't matching up. Unlike the adults that could rationalize everything by saying, well, this is about health and safety. We're trying to keep people from spreading a contagious, deadly disease. And the kids are looking around saying, wait a minute, I don't know anybody that's dying of a disease. This is weird.
Yeah.
This is really strange. Something's going on.
That's right. Yeah. And that's very true. What you're talking about with pets, it's been a long time since we've had any young children, but we know that, you know, our dog, as soon as if he sees somebody starting to get upset, he'll kind of go over and sit next to them. He's like, are you really okay? Or start to bark or something like that. They really do pick up on that. And talk a little bit about what it is doing to the kids in terms of, you know, it's not just the fear and paranoia, but it's also being shut off from being able to read that type of stuff because of masks and other things. And they're still doing that more than the children are getting masked up now more than any other segment of society. And they're the ones that it, I think, does the most psychological damage to, doesn't it?
I was really concerned that this would cause a rift in their psyche, a trauma, by being blocked from seeing faces, reading emotions, being told to be apart from people. Kids don't naturally want to be apart from others. They want to wrestle. They want to play. They want to roll around in the dirt. They're not naturally antisocial creatures. That's how they grow. How they grow their brains is by touching and experiencing their environment. I'm actually more scared now than I was last year for a very different reason, which is the fact that I see so many kids indoors and outdoors in my practice and elsewhere wearing these masks when they don't have to.
Yes.
Meaning voluntarily. And I've asked them, why are you wearing that thing on your face? You have no reason to be doing that right now. And they'll look at me and they'll say, it just feels more comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that to be terrifying. Yeah. When a child has been conditioned to hide his face from others because it's more comfortable, that is the classic definition of a mental illness. If a child had said that to me 2 years ago, I would have turned to the parents and said, we need to get your kid into therapy right now. Something's really wrong. And if we don't, your child is going to grow up scared of life, scared of people, scared of the world. That's what we have right now. We have a whole generation of kids who are too scared to show their faces because it's more comfortable to hide them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's just awful. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why they are focusing on the kids more than anybody else. What do you want people to take away from this book?
There's a few things that I think are very important to note that I wrote about in detail and supported with quite a bit of references and evidence. About a quarter of the book is actually notes and documentation to back up my claims. The first is that this is not new. This pandemic of fear is not new. We have been inculcated to be fearful for quite a long time. And in my book, I actually trace it back to post-war times where we're told that we're at the brink of nuclear apocalypse. And people growing up post-war were told to dive under their desks when the Russians came and bombed us.
And
people who were a certain generation, right, remember that because they had to do that.
Duck and cover.
Well, duck and cover. That's right.
Oh, it's a doubly extended in my background. I lived in Tampa, and so you know, where it's like, well, you kids, you got to take your clothes to school because there's going to be no time to get home. And we had neighborhood schools because we're so close to Cuba when they unleashed those nuclear. So I grew up with that kind of, you know, sort of Damocles hanging over my head.
So imagine a whole generation grows up being told that they're about to be annihilated through a nuclear threat. And then as they get older, they start to hear that there's a Three Mile Island meltdown and they're all going to die of nuclear radiation poisoning domestically. And then after that, they're told that the country on a social level, not just externally, but internally, isn't really safe anymore because there's just so much violence coming from men as the feminists start to move from equal rights to competition and to denigration of masculinity. And then later on, we're told that just being a man is actually threatening, that masculinity is toxic, that there's a rape culture, to the point now where men and women don't feel safe or comfortable around each other, the very basic underpinnings of our society, which are male-female relationships, dating, marriage. We have a whole country that has been told to be scared of one another. And you throw in the politics, scared of Donald Trump, scared of white supremacy. There's these threats that we keep getting thrown at every few years, and they keep mounting and mounting and mounting till we're just vibrating with fear of each other, fear of the racism, fear of the boogeyman with the yellow hair. And then all of a sudden we're told, guess what? There's this giant virus that's coming to invade us. We need to be scared of that. Well, 20 or 30 years ago, people would have said, whatever, another virus. Now we responded in lockstep. Absolutely, sir. We're going to lock up our businesses, close our schools, put on masks, basically isolate ourselves behind a screen and phone it on Zoom until you tell us it's safe to go outside. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. We didn't think. We didn't act critically. We didn't think for ourselves, which brings me to my second major point in the book, which is people stopped thinking. They stopped thinking critically. They reacted with fear. They didn't feel the fear and act in spite of it. What they did was they felt their fear and they acted with it and in concert with it. That's a huge problem. And the reason why this was so effective, this campaign for fear, is that we were primed to go into it. And unfortunately, the consequence of that, being so afraid, led us as Americans to become incredibly receptive and compliant with completely irrational, unconstitutional, and very damaging orders coming down from politicians and bureaucrats. And that has led to a devastation all across our society, physically, mentally, economically, spiritually. Everything has collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So what I put into the book, in addition to the explanation of how we got here, what the causes are of the pandemic, how it drove control and compliance, and now I think actually a purge of thought in our society, and a precedent to come after our children and take control of their bodies, overriding parental consent and injecting them with these developmental biological products that they don't need and can actually harm them. Now we're really pretty much in the tank, in the hole right now. We have really nowhere to go unless we rise up from a grassroots level, throw off our overlords, start to think for ourselves, and deny the fear any longer.
Yes.
And I end in my book by describing exactly specific steps that one can take on an individual and a societal level to push back, to take our country back, to move forward, so that we don't stay mired into this state of dependency and compliance, which is just sucking the blood from our souls and is leading this country down a path that I fear very quickly we may not actually get back from. It may be too far gone at some point very soon if we don't stop this.
Oh, I agree. I mean, we've got some positive signs as people are gradually starting to wake up to this. There's a lot of inertia to the public. And so as they're starting to wake up to this, as I was saying, if we get a big, slow-moving ship that we can turn around, it's going to be hard for them to turn it back in the other direction. And maybe one of the catalysts of this will be to see the people that have been damaged. That could wake them up with this fear. But this is something,
McCullough is a great friend of mine, so I wouldn't mind being introduced as Dr. Peter McCullough.
I was just talking about him, but yeah, Dr. McDonald.
He's fantastic.
I did a long thing about what he presented. But if people wake up to this and we see how this has been running out, even with the TSA, you know, with the TSA, that whole process there, another issue of fear, and they kind of use it in a almost kind of a Skinner-esque way. You know, let me put my hands on you, and I'll immediately reward you with a positive treat of being able to fly. And that I have seen for the longest time as a kind of conditioning. They've done so many things to condition us to value safety over our own liberty. And a big part of that is creating that fear. And people need to understand that if you are not free, you're never going to be safe. You're never going to have anything. You're not going to be prosperous. You know, slaves are not safe. They don't have anything. That is not a safe thing to be a slave. But that's the way they sell it, that, you know, give up everything to us. Give up your life. Give up your liberty. Give up your rule of law, your family, your job, your ability to travel. And then we will keep you safe. That is the kind of the bargain that they've been trying to run on people. When you talk about the fear, I think back to my older sister used to watch the nightly news a lot, the local news, and they would bring in any kind of violent attack. You know, somebody does a home invasion or they do a rape, and it could be anywhere from around the country, and they would bring it in, and she would watch it, and she would get the idea that all of these things were happening, and she knew that it wasn't actually happening all in the town where we lived, but the undercurrent of it, the way that it felt like it was all happening right there where you were. And so it gave her an enhanced fear of the world that she was living in. What is your advice to people in terms of how to push back against this kind of misinformation, the kind of fear-mongering that people are doing, or even if it's the media focusing on this for sensational reasons, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, that type of thing?
You just made a couple really important points. I did mention TSA in my book as a great example of how a real threat becomes magnified, exacerbated, and then its response to it becomes ingrained in our culture. How many years has it been now? 18, 20, 24 years since the infamous shoe bomber in Petaluma tried to ignite his sneaker on an airline? And we are still taking off our damn shoes when we walk through TSA. 18 years later, has there ever been another inflammable shoe? I don't think so. And yet we just take for granted this is the way it's going to be for the rest of our lives, taking off our shoes because of one deranged lunatic in Petaluma.
Mm-hmm. That's
the
right.
Second point.
I remember, before we leave on from that, I remember we had American Carol, and it was done by the Zucker, was it Zucker Brothers or something? And they had a thing in there where they were stripping down completely nude to go fly because, you know, well, there was the underwear bomber, and then there was the shoe bomber, and then there was this bomber and that bomber. And that was done before this stuff happened. And that's exactly what we've become. We've become a satire society, haven't we?
Well, it really has. I can't even tell the difference sometimes between reality and satire. That's why I sometimes see the Babylon Bee and I wonder if it's news or if it's the satirical version. You mentioned the TSA, and you... And you also mentioned this other lovely example, I think, which is so great for psychological purposes, of how news cycles focus on the it bleeds, it leads, because people are fascinated by death. The Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez in Los Angeles, is a great example. When I was growing up, everybody was scared locking their sliding doors on their balcony patios because this man was coming in the middle of the night raping and murdering women. Now, certainly 10, 13, 18 people died from that, but out of 5, 6, 7 million people in LA, you were at probably greater risk of being struck by lightning than being killed by Richard Ramirez. Same thing with plane crashes. We never report when a plane successfully lands, but we certainly report it when it doesn't. So there's a selective bias in reporting purely to drive ratings, which has always been present in media. What's changed recently, though, is that it's been used to drive policy. So for example, ever since this virus came out, it's stopped a little bit recently. I'd say now it's not every day, it's every other day. But every single day, without exception, for over a year, you turn on the television, you open up your phone, you open the newspaper, you press the button for the radio, and what do you hear every single day? The number of cases, the number of hospitalizations, the number of new deaths, city, county, state, national. There's a tracker, almost like that little ribbon at the stock exchange, just keeps running 24/7, never stops.
That's right.
If that's what you see at the beginning of every single day, you're going to think that this is a serious problem that's affecting not just that guy in Dubuque, but also here in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, everywhere. If we were to have done the same thing with car accidents, every morning you wake up and you look at your paper and it says 49 fatalities yesterday from car accidents around the United States, eventually you would start to think it is not even safe to get in my car and drive. People are dying every day in car accidents. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. That's what they did with the virus. And it wasn't done just for news. It was initially, but it started to move policy. So you would see all these numbers every day, and then you'd have this unelected fake doctor here who manages our health department named Barbara Ferrer, who has a PhD in social service work, who knows nothing about medicine or viruses, coming out and saying, you know what? A few people died yesterday, so we're going to have to lock down the city again. Now, normal people would say, hell no, I'm not doing that. This is crazy. But no, because they've been seeing that in the news every single day, month after month, people are dying. You immediately respond with, oh, that sounds very sensible. I see in the papers reporting deaths every day. So I think there is a twofold problem here. One is the conditioning, and the second is the never-endingness. If you have one or the other, it's not so bad. Condition you for a brief period of time to respond to a threat, fine. Or on the other hand, if you have something that prolongs forever, but it's inconsequential, who cares? But when you have something that is unending and conditioned, you start to dissociate, to separate the actual threat from the contemporary threat today. It becomes something that just simply never ends. Be like being afraid of a dinosaur today. Mm-hmm. It was probably a good idea a few million years ago to be afraid of them. Now, not so much. So we're still primed to be just as scared by seeing a face or shaking a hand or going into a coffee shop than we were 18, 20, 22 months ago. And I think the news and I think the politicians have joined together in a kind of collusive practice to condition us to be scared forever, to never have an endpoint, and then to accept policies that we would otherwise said are absolutely ludicrous.
Yes.
And so the only way, I think, the only way, this is my advice to answer your question, the only way that I think we can get out of this is for people to acknowledge that they're scared, but to start thinking more critically and to start asking themselves, what is it that makes sense to me? And that's what started to happen with this uprising of moms who are against these forced vaccinations down to age 5, which it's going to be down to age 1 very soon. Oh, it already is. In Hong Kong, they're already moving it down to age 2. And you have to quarantine for 21 days if you go to Hong Kong, even if you're a citizen, to attend a funeral, a marriage, a business, doesn't matter what you're doing. So they've essentially prohibited travel inside and outside of the country. In Canada, starting, I think it's December 17th, if you're a Canadian citizen, you cannot leave the country unless you have a shot. Cannot physically leave the country.
Wow.
This is East Germany. This is a wall, yes, that's built to keep people from leaving, not from coming in.
That's right.
So we're moving into a very scary time. And if people don't recognize that the threat is exaggerated, the threat is unending, the response is completely totalitarian, and you start to ask yourself, does it make sense for someone to come and take my child to a school with a van that has ice cream, give them an injection without my consent and send them home for a disease that doesn't affect children, people are starting to say, hold on, this does not make sense. I was on board with all the other stuff. I'm not on board with this. I'm seeing uprisings. I'm seeing pushback. The elections in Virginia a few weeks ago are evidence of that. Strike yesterday here in Los Angeles, Save Our Children out in the valley, huge 8,000 strong protest downtown Los Angeles on Monday of last week with firemen, firefighters, and police saying we're not going to force vaccinate the fire and the police forces and the doctors and the nurses. I'm starting to see people actually respond with a strong, emphatic no. We're going to take our bodies back. We're going to take our freedom back. This is wrong. I will not accept it. And I hope that people, when they read the book, United States of Fear, that they will recognize that the starting point is to surround yourself with like-minded people, people that are rational, not necessarily agree with you, but that are rational, thoughtful, and that support basic concepts of freedom and liberty, whether they're black, white, gay, straight, old, young, rich, poor, immigrant, native born, doesn't matter, like-minded people. And from that, you can form a small but strong coalition of support so that you realize that you're not crazy either. And then you can start to organize and you can start to protest civil disobedience, take risks because you know that people will have your back, yank your kids out of school, put them in a small community of other like-minded parents who don't want to give their children away to critical race theory, forced vaccinations, all this nonsense, allowing your daughter to be raped in a bathroom by a little boy with a skirt on who says he's a girl. These are the things that can stop this, because I don't think we can reform the government. I don't think we can reform the corporations in the next 1 or 2 years. It has to actually start from the ground up.
Oh, I couldn't agree with that more.
Risk.
It has to come from the bottom up, because all this tyranny is coming from the top down. As I've said many times, you know, you cannot, freedom is not going to be given to us. It's only taken. They took it from us, and we're going to have to take it back. You know, we're talking about these communities and having like-minded individuals, and I've said from the very beginning, you know, last year, 2020, as we were looking, after we got into the summer, we'd been going through like 3 months of this, and you had a lot of churches that had some of them just scared to death about what they'd heard on the media, some of them wanting to be a good citizen and do whatever the government said. But finally, about July, we started having a lot of churches, and some of them never did shut down. I give them credit, and I interviewed many of those people. But we started to have some high-profile churches start to push back, like MacArthur's in L.A., and I said, look, you got 7,000 people. They're in a demographic that they are telling everybody they're going to die. If they get together with like-minded people just because they've got a higher priority, they say, well, you know what? We may die, but, you know, we're called to do whatever. You know, this is what God calls us to do, to get together in this community, and so we're going to do it, and we'll see what happens. And as people would see that, they'd start to realize that this is not something that they need to be afraid of. And that's the key thing, standing up. And as one person stands up and as other people and like-minded people start to stand up to this, everybody starts to look around and say, oh, yeah, I can do that as well. That is the key thing from the ground up, absolutely. When we talk about how we get past this, Dr. McDonald, we talk about, you mentioned the constant repetition. And of course, we know how effective that is, because the people who have been very effective in terms of creating propaganda, people like Edward Bernays that helped Woodrow Wilson sell World War One. After that, he went to Madison Avenue. And so they know from an advertising standpoint how, no matter how absurd the claims, if they keep repeating them and you hear it enough, you know, it does have an effect. And people look at these ridiculous commercials and say, well, I don't believe that. And yet it still will affect their purchasing patterns. So how do you have something in your book about how to be good consumers of this information and to not be taken in by this tactic?
Well, I do discuss media in the book. And this is a tough one, honestly, because most people are so immersed in it's truly a fascistic media. You've got really government intrusion and collusion with media now, where media is being used as the surrogate for the government.
That's right.
And often, not just to censor and omit information, but also to rebrand it into something which is true misinformation, not the misinformation that we often hear, which is essentially, I don't like what you say, but I mean actual lies, actual propaganda. And because the media is acting on behalf of the government, there's a sort of firewall that allows a government to say, well, we're not intruding into free speech. It's that private business. He can do what he wants, which is really a facetious argument. It's very similar to what corrupt authoritarian regimes will do when they hire hit squads to go and assassinate their political opponents. And they'll say, well, we didn't kill our political opponent. It was this rioting mob of guys with guns. Well, they happen to be paid by a third party that you supported through a contractual agreement with your coffee cartel. But it's essentially just an extension of government. So it's difficult for people who are not awake and aware of this to start to think more critically when all they do is listen to true propaganda day in and day out on their phones and on their television sets and on their computer. So one thing that I will remind people of, regardless of whether they agree with me or not, is this. I'll say, look, you tell me very often, and I hear this every day from people who disagree with me, there's so much information out there and it's so conflicting, I don't know who to trust. How do I know that you're not lying to me, doctor, versus the guy on CNN? And I say, fair enough. How do you make decisions in other aspects of your life? How do you decide what stocks to purchase? How do you decide what restaurant to go to? How do you decide which lane of traffic to drive in on your way to work? Do you just say, well, gosh, you know, I mean, there's so many options. I mean, how do you know what to choose? You judge based on past experience. And I think that if we're honest, we have to acknowledge that there are certain sources of information that from the very beginning of this pandemic, looking back retrospectively, we know with assuredness have lied to us. We know that. And if you can just in your own head, note the sources of information that provided objectively false information at the time that was proven later, why not start to disregard those sources of information and focus more on the ones that you might have thought were kind of nutty at the time, but kept giving you correct information looking back on it? Just like the pollster that kept giving us these crazy predictions for elections for the last 8 to 10 years. And then a month or so after all the election votes were tallied, we looked back and said, wow, that guy was within 2 percentage points on the state and the federal races. And the next time he was the same, and the next time, and the next time. Eventually, you have to accept that no matter how contrarian his position is before the election, he seems to have a pretty darn good track record. So when people challenge me and say, well, you're crazy, I'll say, find something I said in the last year and a half that was proven to be objectively false, that was a lie, that was actually inaccurate. And they can't do it. Because even though at the time what I said sounded really contrarian, everything I said turned out to be right. So I challenge people on the other side to think about it that way. Rather than beating them over the head with data, I'll just say, look at patterns. This is the most basic human way that we make decisions, is patterns, because patterns tend to repeat. And if you hear and see media that are telling you things that turn out to be objectively wrong and that they never apologize for, they never correct, month after month after month, it might be a good idea to switch sources and find people that you might not like them, but they always, always wind up being truthful and accurate after the fact.
Oh, that's great advice. That really is great advice. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, when you look at this, you have experienced this as well. I've been attacked for saying back in March of 2020 that this is going into a medical dictatorship, and I call the vaccine a genetic code injection, and now we've got the CEO of Bayer saying, you know, this really is genetic therapy. We didn't want to call it that because we didn't want to scare people. We called it a vaccine. So, you know, this kind of stuff comes along.
Exactly.
And I was accused of being over the top of this stuff, but that's a great way, you know, just look at people's past performance. And that's how we understand a lot of this stuff as well, because we've looked at I've watched Fauci and the CDC for years and how they were pushing flu vaccines on an annual basis. And so I knew they were running the same plays that they had been running on an annual basis for the flu shot. I said, this looks suspicious, from the testing stuff to the CDC numbers. Talk about social media, because that's been a big part of this. This has really upped the game on propaganda, hasn't it? Because it used to be, and I've talked about this many times, you know, we had propaganda, we had the newspapers that would, William Randolph Hearst would push the wars for the government and so forth. Then it got better with radio, then even better with television. You added a visceral component to it as well. And then with social media, they were able to kind of close the feedback loop. And so they've got something that they can really fine-tune their narrative. And as we've seen in the last 3-4 years, this active censorship of anything that is not the narrative. So they can fine-tune their narrative and see what is working. And they can shut down anybody who is questioning their facts, their figures, or their conclusions. Talk about social media and how we engage with that, because that's been a tremendous influence in this pandemic.
Well, social media really found its way before the pandemic. I could see it with the kids in my practice who were becoming more anxious, more depressed, usually through bullying, self-image problems, criticisms, catastrophic thinking. And I wondered why. I mean, are they in an environment where they're being abused face-to-face constantly, being told if they're a girl, they're fat, if they're a boy, they're weak, or they're gay, you know, all kinds of pejoratives. And what I noticed was that it wasn't coming from their friends directly, as it would when we grew up. You know, people would laugh at you. They'd put notes in your locker. That's how bullying occurred. Now it's happening on a phone, and every kid is carrying a phone in his pocket everywhere he goes, 24/7. That primed children, and this is true with adults as well, but it primed children to be creating a reality in their head that was reflected more through the phone than through their actual own eyes and their own ears. And it's incredibly powerful on an emotional level in terms of its predictive value for how someone will feel, how someone will act, how someone will make decisions. Now, during the pandemic, the social media companies took it to another level. Rather than trying to simply influence what you buy, what songs you listen to, fashion culture, they started to use social media as a funnel for propaganda. And you mentioned, broadly speaking, how it's done. It's done by omitting information that could raise consciousness, critical thinking, cause people to start to question and be curious about mainstream narratives, and at the same time, to push information that would then reinforce the mainstream narrative from people who could potentially get access to other views elsewhere. So while they're doing this, they're giving you the impression that this is sort of a free discussion, like a big clubhouse where people are coming in and out and just sharing their thoughts. But actually, every single image, thought, video, comment is being curated by a small handful of people in a very, very small handful of companies. That's up right. In Northwest United States.
That's right.
And so it's gone from just internal kind of social control to a really much larger economic, philosophical, political control, all unbeknownst to us. If we downloaded an app called Pravda, the propaganda arm of the Biden administration, we would just laugh at it and say, "What the hell? I'm not gonna use this for my information." But when it's called TikTok and it's called Facebook Live and it's called, you know, Instagram Soars and all these little cute little names, people say, "Oh, this sounds really cool. This is like a fun little app." But meanwhile, things are getting added, things are getting deleted. Your profile is being culled into an algorithm, so you're getting pushed information that's most likely to draw your attention. And now pretty soon, this phone, the social media, is and it's in our pocket all the time, is beeping and pinging and alerting and causing us to pull it out and say, "Oh, what's that beep? Did I get another like? Did I get another friend recommendation who happens to be some sort of a shill for a quasi-political organization that I don't know the name of?" And then eventually, all of our thinking, all of our Pavlovian responses are all being directed and culled by social media. I think this is very, very dangerous. However, there are apps that I would call some sort of social media type of apps that don't do this and that can actually do the opposite. One was Parler, which of course was taken down specifically because it was actually powerful and was spurring critical thinking. It was completely obliterated last year. But there's others that have cropped up that allow people to share information, create groups, put out videos, such as Telegram, such as Signal, even WhatsApp to some degree, although I don't trust it because it's owned by Facebook, and you don't have a really secure information anymore. But there are semi-secure or almost secure applications that do not intrude into what you say and do not censor, do not delete videos, do not put up little signs when you post something saying, "I'm not really sure I want to get my flu shot this year." And they say, COVID-19 information, click here for more. Here's the truth, you know, that kind of thing, which is what Facebook does all the time.
That's a dead giveaway.
And I have started to use those, and I've started to join groups. Clubhouse is another one that give you really good information. Mm-hmm. You're constantly being directed. Every time you turn on you post a picture with yourself standing in front of Walgreens holding a bottle of wine, and then it says, COVID-19, find out here, click right now, get it good. And what on earth? This is my Facebook picture. Why am I being given like an information banner about when to get my flu shot because I'm standing near, you know, near a Walgreens? So I think there's other social media apps that you can use, and you can join groups that you trust. You can share information videos without them being taken down, censored, like YouTube and Facebook do all the time. And I do think that that's a way to counterbalance some of the effect of the big three, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, that really just try to take over our minds and tell us what to think. You can, instead of being the consumer of the information, if you use social media properly, you can actually be the pusher of the information and your own curator. Okay. That's the way to use it intelligently and properly, but you have to be thoughtful about it. Mm-hmm. You have to actually go and start using these apps that are specifically designed for freedom of thought and not just be beholden to Twitter and YouTube and Facebook as your primary driver and sources of thought. It requires work, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. And we never know, you know, they've got a large list, and we know now a large list of things that are forbidden topics. The first time I got censored by YouTube was back in 2013, mm-hmm. December 2013. I did a thing about the Federal Reserve because it was the 100th anniversary of that. That was the first thing at InfoWars when I worked there. First thing that InfoWars had pulled down was a thing about the Federal Reserve. That was pretty telling. And then, don't want you talking about the origins of the Federal Reserve. And then, you know, it's now we know that they've got a long list of things and of people, you know, like me that they don't like to have. So I don't have to worry about Facebook anymore. They've already taken care of me there. But that is the key thing. I mean, we can't isolate it. We just have to be
permanently suspended.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, after they did that, I thought, well, I'm not even going to bother to try to get back. I've tried to get on YouTube a few times, but they, you know, I don't filter what I talk about, and the things that I talk about are forbidden. You know, this pandemic, the vaccines, climate issues, even, you know, well, whatever it is. Yeah. If they tell me that I can't talk about it, it's like, oh, let's see why that is, because that's probably what I do need to be talking about. So that's kind of been my metric, and that's what gets me kicked off. But it's an excellent book.
Yes.
From what you sent me an advanced copy of it, and I was able to read some of it, and it really is a page-turner. One of the reviews of this said it accurately diagnoses that which is ailing our country. It is accurate, eye-opening, entertaining. Don't plan on putting it down until you're finished turning the pages. And I think that is absolutely true from what I've read of it and from my interviews with you. I'm sure that is true. Tell people where they can find this.
Sure. So United States of Fear is available on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. There is a Kindle edition out for those of you who like to read on your device. And I am planning to put out an Audible version for those that just want to listen through their AirPods and while they're driving. But that's in process.
Okay.
So Amazon, Barnes & Noble can find United States of Fear. Hopefully all three versions out fairly soon. But right now, hardback, hardcover, and Kindle edition. And it does, by the way, for those of you who just want to get good information to back up your arguments, or perhaps you don't even believe anything that I'm saying, and you want to find out why I'm wrong, I have 20, 30, 40 pages of references in this book. So every single argument I make, I back up with data. I back up with FBI crime stats. I back up with historians who've written novels very well, not novels, but historical biographies. About the people I write about. So this is not just me mouthing off. This is not just me talking about my own theories in a vacuum. I spent a great deal of time not only honing my arguments, but also finding real objective data, and often from the left and from liberal media. I've actually preemptively gone out and tried to find sources with those that disagree with me, generally speaking, so that people can't dismiss it as just, oh, you're quoting that right-wing Fox News website. I don't do that. I'm really being very fair and honest, and I'm trying to set up an argument that is unassailable, an argument that is not just an opinion, but is one that even people who are more liberal-minded and perhaps very pro-vaccine, pro-government, really can't argue against.
Yeah.
And that was really one of my core philosophical goals in writing the book. So I hope that it is well received. Lots of references. United States of Fear, available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And if you buy the book, please post a review. Reviews are always very helpful in getting the word out for the book.
That's good. Yeah. And you know, when you talk about that, and you stress the fact that you research and you reference the studies, that is one of the key things that I found, is that the people that you can't trust are going to reference, well, an authority figure told me this, but they will not argue, they won't show you the data, and they don't want to argue over the data. You know, you can have a set of data and people can look at this and say, well, I think it means this, and somebody else will say, I think it means that. Just before you came on, I was talking about Dr. Scott Atlas, and he said, you know, when I presented an alternative to these lockdowns to Fauci and Birx and Redfield, he said they just sat there in silence. He said they didn't challenge what I had to say. They didn't care. It's like, well, we're the experts, and this is what we say. And when you hear people saying that, you know you've been had, and you know those are the people you don't need to listen to. You need to listen to people like Dr. McDonald, who goes through and does his sources and argues from the data, from the studies. That is the key thing. And, you know, the arguments from authority are what got us into this situation. Again, the book is United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to Mass Delusional Psychosis by Dr. Mark McDonald. It's fascinating talking to you, sir. Thank you so much for doing this. This is a very important book. This is a very important key aspect of what is being done to us, and people need to understand this. You've got to pull back the curtain and see what the tricks are that people are actually doing to you. And as a psychologist, you're better positioned to do that than anybody, because this has been so much about psychology and manipulation. Thank you so much.
It has, absolutely.
All right. And so again, you find United States of Fear by Dr. Mark McDonald, MD. Thank you. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, in the little bit of time we got left here, I really want to talk about what this Bear executive had to say, but I must go into headline news because I haven't talked about this for the last couple of days. As we're talking about, listen to somebody who knows where this is, that has told you the truth in the past, as Dr. McDonald said. Those are the kind of people that know what is going on. We had Doug Collins, a former congressman from Georgia, says Hillary started the Russia hoax to cover her email scandal. Well, he's absolutely right. Who knew? I was telling you 5 years ago. I even used an example. I said, yeah, Russia, you know, the Russians are coming. It's a red scare. I said, this is a red herring. This is a smelly fish. This whole thing about Russiagate was a smelly fish that she drug across the trail of the email scandal so that the hounds would get thrown off. That's been that way for a long time. But while we're talking about emails, again, over the weekend, we had the FBI email server hacked They had spam email sent out to over 100,000 accounts. And I thought one of the most interesting aspects of this was the fact that the cybersecurity experts who looked into this said that, they were using this to make it look like it was authentic from the FBI. The criminal organization that they have attributed this to is a group called the Dark Overlord. But they've also said that this was something that had to do with a war, essentially, between hackers and cybersecurity. Now, they're always at war with each other. That's the whole point. You know, they have the white hats and the black hats and so forth. But the hackers got the upper hand here, and they actually used the FBI. Let that sink in. They used the FBI to attack their enemies in cybersecurity. I think that's a little bit amusing. The FBI and CISA, remember the Cyber Information Security Act or whatever? CISPA was what they tried to get through for years. I got CISA through. It was, by the way, it was about a year ago that Steve Pachinik was telling everybody that CISA was running that massive sting operation, putting out the blockchain watermark ballots, and that they sent out 20,000 National Guards and the units, and they were already arresting people who had rigged the election. That was about a year ago. And so here we are. We've got the FBI and CISA are the ones who are basically pwned by this in the first place. We've got people who are trolling Zuckerberg over the metaverse. It's Babylon Bee as well as Iceland. They have a video where a guy looks very much like Mark Zuckerberg. He's very stiff, but he's got the hairline and the haircut. He looks exactly like Mark Zuckerberg and goes, well, we're unveiling something here we call the Icelandverse. It's very real, he says. Everything here, as a matter of fact, is real. He says, as you can see there, he looks very, very much like Mark Zuckerberg. He calls himself Zach Mossberg. And the whole thing is a parallel. He goes, yeah, you could actually open up the door and go outside, and it's just like reality. And then the door kind of sticks on him. Babylon Bee did the same thing. God develops an ultra-realistic metaverse where people can talk, learn, and work with other people. He calls it the universe. This is more realistic than any virtual reality I've experienced before, said one person. I can literally smell the fresh air, I can touch the cool grass, and I can interact with other players in incredible ways. Another early adopter of God's universe demonstrated how detailed and how immersive the player-to-player interaction was, as she showed off her humble home, complete with husband, children, and dog. She thanked God for providing her with a sense of purpose and fulfillment unmatched by any competing product. Critics were quick to point out the possible bugs in the universe, writes Babylon Bee, listing wars, injustice, violence, disease, and suggested that God either label it early access or reboot it altogether. These criticisms, however, were countered by God's supporters who were well-versed in the instruction manual, stating a truly realistic universe must come with the full experience of joy, pain, choice, and accountability, life and death, but that the end game is totally worth it. We are at the end game of the show, and I want to get to this article about the Bayer executive. Again, for a year, I have called this genetic code injection, among many other things. But that, of course, is a key part of this. And we have the president of Bayer's pharmaceuticals division told a panel at the World Health Summit the last week of October, about 2 weeks ago, in Berlin. He told these international experts that the mRNA shots are indeed, quote, cell and gene therapy. This is a story from LifeSite News. He said, we marketed them as vaccines, quote, unquote, in order to be palatable to the public. This is Stefan Ulrich. He's the president of the pharmaceuticals division of Bayer. The World Health Summit had about 6,000 people from 120 countries, and he told his fellow international experts from academia, politics, and the private sector that the novel mRNA, quote-unquote, vaccines are actually cell and gene therapy. He said, we're really taking that leap to drive innovation, us as a company, Bayer, in cell and gene therapies. Ultimately, the mRNA vaccines are an example for that cell and gene therapy. I always like to say, if we had surveyed the public 2 years ago and asked, would you be willing to take a gene or cell therapy and inject it into your body? We probably would have had a 95% refusal rate. You see, it's marketing. You see, it's psychology, just as we're talking to Dr. Mark McDonald. If we told you what it was, you wouldn't have done it, right? If we told you this is the mark of the beast, you wouldn't have taken it. So we're not going to tell you that. We'll tell you something else. We won't tell you that this is genetic therapy. This is to change the very essence of what you are as a human, said Klaus Schwab. He said, no, I'm not just talking about, you know, I'm talking about literally, you know, literally. He said, we have a bio revolution, and we're going to unleash health for all. The McKinsey Global Institute says that the bio revolution is a confluence of advances in biological science, accelerating the development of computing, automation, and artificial intelligence to fuel a new wave of innovation. This bio revolution could have significant impact on economies and our lives. In addition to gene therapy and a biological revolution, Ulrich, the Bayer executive, also mentioned his role, the role that his company has, along with other prominent institutions, had in pushing contraception on developing countries. Because, see, a big part of what is behind this gene therapy is to reduce the population. He said, we've invested $400 million this year into new plants that are dedicated to producing long-acting contraceptives for women. Together with Bill and Melinda Gates, we're working very closely on family planning initiatives. You know, this might actually, we might actually start to call this coerced, everybody get vaccinated. We might actually call that kind of a forced sterilization. Do you think that's maybe what this is? The vaccines are a genetic therapy, a gene therapy, a genetic code injection. And their ultimate goal is forced sterility. They said reducing the planet's population. Klaus Schwab said in June of last year, he said, one silver lining of this pandemic is that it's shown how quickly we can make radical changes to our lifestyles. We have forced businesses and individuals to abandon practices long claimed to be essential. How'd they do that? Well, you just had from the White House on down, they said, well, you're not essential. What you're doing here is not essential, not going to be allowed. Just gone. Just like that. Fascist, authoritarian, medical dictatorship. That's what this has been from the beginning. We forced businesses and individuals to abandon practices they long thought to be essential, from air travel to working in the office. And, of course, they are still producing new products. We have a new type of COVID vaccine that is in the works, and they're very excited about this. Reuters is talking about a novel COVID vaccine, which is applied as a skin patch and uses T cells to fight back against the virus. Now, I don't know, they don't mention that this is the same mechanism that Gates got from MIT, but again, that was a skin patch. A skin patch that, you know, if you're afraid of needles, you don't like the needles being stuck in, you can just press it against your skin. You don't feel anything painful because the micro dot needles are so short that they don't get to the nerve endings in your skin. But it still implants what they want. Plus, it implants some luciferase so you can see if somebody has actually been injected. They can see it on your hand or your arm or whatever. Leaves a mark that can be illuminated so they can tell if you've gotten the shot, if you've complied. Now, the interesting thing about this is they say, well, this new wonderful skin patch is not going to be available until 2025 at the earliest, noting the normal time frame for vaccine development. You mean it takes at least 3 years? They've already started some tests. Oh, yeah, at least 3 years for the multiple phases. Meanwhile, you have both Fauci and Gates saying, well, the vaccines are showing waning immunity. Now, some people are declaring victory out of this and saying, yeah, see, look, they were telling everybody just a few months ago, back in February 28th, here's a post from Fauci The Independent reported all three vaccines, he said, are 100% effective against death and hospitalization. Well, they're not saying that anymore. Now Fauci and Gates and others are saying they're not as effective as we thought. So now you're going to have to take a third one. You're going to have to take a fourth one. That's the game right now. And that's what you really ought to be another red flag. The fact that they haven't changed anything at all about it. If this is not, if two shots are not effective, then why would you take a third or a fourth? Well, simply because they tell you you must. That is really what this is ultimately about. Fauci said, in the UK, getting three jabs or getting your booster will become an important fact, and we will have to adjust our concept of what constitutes full vaccination. And we better adjust our concepts of what defines legitimate government. That's it for the show. Thank you for listening. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.